Okay, hello everyone. Welcome to our December 12, 2005. Somebody said put in the year because that way they know on the tapes what year it is. Council meeting. Let the record show that all council members are present. And let us begin with a moment of silence. Thank you. For our flag salute today, we've run out of staff in the administration.
They're both in school, and they both live in San Luis Obispo. My wife works at Cal Poly in the Public Affairs Office. Prior to taking this job in Morro Bay, I was the county administrator for 8 years in San Luis Obispo. So I've been in the area for a number of years off and on. In fact, I went to high school in San Luis Obispo. For all of you who went to Morro Bay High, you have my sincere pity. And lucky or unluckily, I'm an education product at Cal Poly as well in the business department. Well, it wasn't the business department. It's now the School of Business or College of Business, I guess they call it. And I don't know, we have 3 dogs, which is at least 2 too many dogs. And I don't know. I don't know what else there is. I enjoy working out here. Enjoy the organization and the people. And it's a beautiful community, and it's fun to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, council and mayor announcements and things. I have several, and they start out with thank yous. We've had some incredible events happen this year, despite the fact that the city hasn't been able to do a lot of the financing and support for them, and so I want to thank a lot of people. First of all, for our Thanksgiving dinner, the Rotary and the Police Officers Association, the Boy Scouts, Albertsons, who donated all the turkeys, 2 dogs, Culligan, Carla's, all were part of the donations for that, and 400 meals were served that day. It's a delightful event. It's still one of my favorites for the year. Also, the boat parade. We were unable as a city to fund that, and the Chamber of Commerce and the Coast Guard stepped in, and they put on a wonderful parade, which I believe was attended by just as many people as the previous ones. So they did a really good job, and we thank them. The tree lighting. PG&E not only supplied the lights, but they supplied the truck and the personnel to put them on the tree, which was very generous of them. They and Friends of the Fire Department were the ones who put that together. At all of these was the presence of AGP Video, and we really thank them for what they do above and beyond their contracted service. They do a lot of things for our community, and we're very appreciative of that. So that's all the thank yous. Oh, and also, no, it's not all the thank yous, to all of the volunteers who helped in all of those activities. Thank you so much. I didn't want to get into naming names. Some of them are sitting here in the audience, and I'm not going to name names because there's too many. But you know who you are, and we really appreciate the hard work that all of you do. Thank you. Let's see. We have on our consent agenda, just to let you know, John Solu has resigned from the Promotions Committee, and we are regretfully accepting his resignation. He has business out of town and is unable to make the meeting schedule, and we certainly thank him for what he has done and hope that he can become involved again when his business situation changes. Also, we had last week the council attended an emergency procedures meeting with Mike Pond, and that is going to be shown on AGP. So I would advise all of you to catch that and just be aware of what the arrangements are within our city and county for emergency situations. It was very helpful. On that subject, too, I don't know if the rest of you saw this in the paper, but this wonderful CPR training device that you can buy and have at your home. And even children learn how to administer CPR from this device. It's very inexpensive. I think it's like $30 or something. And it's, if you want to find information about it, it's cpranytime.org. And I'll have this with me if anybody's interested, but it's a very good training device and safety device. Okay, office hours. Just to let everyone know, I am doing kind of holiday office hours, so I will be in my office hours on January 5th. I will not be the following week because that's Bird Festival weekend, and I will be back in office hours on the 19th, and after that we'll resume my regular schedule. The fire department wanted me to let all of you know that they have toy and gift collection boxes at the fire department, so if you want to be generous to others in the community, please stop by and donate there. I had a question last office hours about street repairs and what our schedule is. With our limited budget, it's pretty well stymied at this point. However, we will get through the winter and see if how much is left in our budget. At that time, we can do some more repairs. We try to keep a little bit on hold so that if there's any emergencies during the rainy season, we have that. I'm sorry, it's not something I like to report, but I did want to respond.
They need more of them. And so her number is 772-0360. So that's 0360. Her name's Carolyn Newman, and it's a couple of hours is all it is. And you go out there, ring the bell, sell See's candy, and visit with your neighbors. The other thing, I also went to the disaster training. I thought two things in particular that would use double announcing was that we actually have a disaster radio AM station possible. It's the visitors' travel advisory station, and it's 1620 AM. So I've been listening the last couple of days, and you get the chamber's announcements, you get Coast Guard announcements about the weather every day, but should some kind of emergency happen in town, an evacuation or such, you can go to 620 AM, and they use it then to announce where to go, what to do, that kind of thing. Chief Pond also told us about a website called 72 Hours, and that's 72hours.org. What would you do in the 3 hours right after an emergency starts? I went there today. It's very concise. It's got these regular checklists. What do you do with your pet? What do you do with your utilities? And so that's 72hours.org. And then, the ad hoc meeting. The ad hoc committee on the reuse of the power plant property, we've been chugging right along, and we have issue on the agenda tonight actually to form the committee. But our next meeting will be on Monday, the 19th of December. That's how dedicated we are, 4 to 5:30. And we do have a lot of dedicated people showing up, and I thank them for that kind of activity. So we're changing from Wednesdays to Mondays because of a scheduling problem with my teaching, actually. So our next meeting will be on 12-19. That's a week from today, from 4 to 5:30. We also made it 4 to 5:30 to allow more people who work all day to come to that meeting, possibly. And Rob has been generous enough to switch his schedule, too. And I think, too, I just wanted to say that I appreciate every time we get a letter from a citizen. And this one was about speed out on 41 by Miners. And I just want to thank Mayor Peters, because you've been proactive about asking who controls speed and what can we do about that, because I think this was a decent concern. But I think every time a citizen writes us a letter, it's a great way of letting us know a little something that's going on. We can't see everything or know everything. And so I thank them for doing that.
Well, picking up on that, the response I got was not real positive. I think we all agree getting out of Miners is a difficult feat at best. However, it's a Caltrans issue, and so the best we can do is hope that they'll maybe put in a yellow light or something, because that is difficult. I'm looking at the police chief as I say that. So, okay. Bill?
Oh, a couple of things. First of all, to follow up on that, you may have noticed they just raised the speed limit from 35 mm-hmm. to 40 through there. And in California, because they're afraid of speed traps, what they do is if you have a particular road you travel on, if you and your neighbors will exceed the speed limit, Caltrans will raise the speed limit for you. And the secret to do this is go fast enough that you don't get the ticket, but fast enough they'll raise the speed limit for you. That's how California does things. The other thing, a follow-up on the Lighted Boat Parade for the first time in 10 years. I was not part of it this year, but it was, the words I got were quality, and we had a tremendous number of people come see it, and it was apparently one of the best. So my thanks to those folks. And a little follow-up on the Salvation Army. I spent part of Saturday out at Spencer's ringing the bell, and it's a lot of fun. The people who are going to donate will look at you. The people who don't want to will pretend you're not there. You could stand in front of them. They'll walk around you and not see you. But it's a lot of fun, and what I would say is the money that is used by our local Salvation Army to help the needy and to have provide holiday meals for the people that need them, that money comes from those kettles. So if you want to help the local Salvation Army, go find a kettle and put some money in it.
Okay, Betty? At our SLOCOG meeting last week, we had a report that annual report came up with a couple of statistics about the different cities, and I just want to report on three of those that relate specifically to Morro Bay. One is that over 30% of our households make under $25,000. That was a little shocking to me. I didn't realize it was that high. So I just wanted to bring that up. And as we think about issues and go through things, that's one thing, 25%. Another 25% of our adults are disabled. Thought that was another characteristic of the community we may not be aware of. And the last one is that just under half of our population, 4,500, are either over 65 or under 19. And this came out of our transportation report, and so it related to our dialer ride that over...
...taken that requires reporting under the Brown Act.
Okay, thank you. Now we go to the public comment period, as usual, 3 minutes, and keep it pleasant.
Good evening, Mayor and members of the council. My name is Rick Deschler. Tonight I'm speaking as a private citizen. I was disappointed with the lack of information for item C1 survey results. The summary was clearly written to give the illusion of a successful tax measure increase if we just pay the consultants more money. What a surprise. The report lacked any details on the questions that were asked. What about the transient occupancy tax? I would also like to know about the questions that were asked about the Friends of the Library and the Chamber of Commerce. 2 months ago, I spoke with Dr. Rosenwasser, president of Cuesta College, during her sales pitch for a bond measure for June's ballot. I stated that Morro Bay was thinking of a tax measure also. She told me the mayor of Morro Bay promised to place the city tax measure on the November ballot so that they would not have competing tax issues in June. This was over 2 months ago, well before the survey was finalized. Has this been decided by council already and the public left out, waiting for the consultants to manipulate the public? Please consider this. Thank you.
I'll respond to that when we're finished.
Good evening. My name is Bill Davies, and I'm an immigrant from San Francisco and a Morro Bay resident and homeowner. I'd like to thank tonight the city council and the staff and the commissions and advisory boards, and all the workers in the city for all that you've done for my city this year. Some of the things that have been done were not too popular, but because of the financial situation, they had to be done. And I just want to thank everybody again. And if I did have one wish for the New Year's, it would be a successful ballot measure to raise the sales taxes. So anyway, I want to say Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays to everybody. Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Kim Kimball, and I'm here on behalf of the Chamber of Commerce, and I'd like to wish you all a happy holiday. This is going to be my last opportunity to do so as I'm leaving the country, and if I have time, I'll explain that. There is also a drum for food at 845 Embarcadero at the Suite D, the Chamber of Commerce. One note on the lighted boat parade, the Chamber of Commerce did take the responsibility and paid the bills. The Coast Guard and the Harbor Department stepped in, and I'd like to thank them immensely for their participation. We did pay for the city harbor, but the Coast Guard was not an issue that we had to address financially. I'd also like to thank the city for the caroling cops. Because the Rudolphs retired this year, it was really important to make sure that we still had something going on for the children. This is something that has been a tradition here in Morro Bay, and I'm very pleased that you saw yourselves clear to be able to accomplish that. I'd also like to address A5. I personally know the Smiths. I've known them for over 35 years, and they're great business people and very successful, and I think they would make a very good addition to the business community of Morro Bay. C5, the signage, I'd like to thank Bruce Ambo for all of his work on getting grants to help us get appropriate signage. The signs were brought before you, and they're beautiful, and all I can say is, Bruce, you do a fantastic job. You're my hero, and thank you very much. Next, I'd like to tell you that on July 14th, we will be having an economic forum to address the economics of the city of Morro Bay. This is being sponsored by the Chamber of Commerce and jointly produced by UCSB and the Business School at Cal Poly. Next, morrobay.org. AGP has got our eye in the sky up. Click on morrobay.org, Chamber of Commerce, go to the bottom, and you'll find the eye in the sky, and that camera is live and well, and you can take control over it. So, AGP, thank you for getting it up for us, and there'll be more discussion about that in January when I come back. And I'm going to Sri Lanka to build houses. We've built 72 houses so far, and we have another 100. The year's anniversary of the tsunami is December 26th, so I'll be spending my holidays over there, and thank you so very much for allowing me to speak just a little bit over my time. Thank you.
Thank you. You didn't. It was great, and have a good time in Sri Lanka.
I got children from the audience to do the drawing for the raffle, which really worked well. All of the major prizes in our raffle were won by local residents, which really amazed all of us. The mayor and the children had a countdown for the holiday tree lighting, and like magic, on went the tree. They sang jingle bells, and everyone had a great time. I would like to thank our local businesses for their generosity in the donations and the entire community for the support they gave us. It was greatly appreciated, and I want to wish all of you a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Thank you.
Thanks, Keith.
Richard Sadowski, 490 Java, Morro Bay. In about 5 hours and 24 minutes, a man's going to be executed in San Francisco at midnight. And I would like to ask for a moment of silence for him, but more importantly, for the spirits that he's touched. Thank you. I sincerely appreciate you letting me do that today. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Marla Bruton. I'm a resident of Morro Bay. I'm deeply affected by the execution of Tukey Williams as well. So just give me a minute here. And I hope we don't have rioting in the streets. I came here tonight to talk about the Duke Power Plant cell. And I wanted to know if Mayor Peters, if you've signed the letter, and if Duke has given you the $1.5 million they promised upon signature of that lease. So if you can address that, the community is wondering. I also, to be fair, I was in another community, and after the decision was made by this council to sign that lease with Duke, I said that our mayor was a bait-and-switch mayor, And I just want to make it out front. You already know that I said that. And that's a belief of a lot of, as far as the Duke situation went. There are a lot of people in Morro Bay who still don't know that that lease was signed. They're shocked, really. And so basically I wanted to know if, for once, if Duke did do what they said they would do, because they have lied to this community and left this community with nothing for so long. And the $1.5 million is such a paltry, paltry amount of money. But I'd like to see it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Honorable Mayor, Council, staff, friends, friends at home, Joey Recano, Ocean Outfall Group. Recently, I was watching TV late at night, and I turned on my favorite channel, Channel 20. And I caught a little bit of a promotions committee meeting, and a nice gentleman was coming up with the slogans that they had made for our city. And it was, Morro Bay, get in touch with your better nature. And I was touched. And the reason I was touched was because there's a battle going on here. It's a battle of epic proportions. There is a war between the dinosaurs who see our estuary as a place for industrial uses that make a lot of money for a very few at a very high environmental cost versus those of us who would seek to exploit the multi-billion dollar ecotourism business. Now, we all know about the recent decision to allow Duke to have a 50-year lease on the outfall. And what that really translates into is a 50-year lease to use their destructive single-pass cooling intake. Now, I expected Mayor Peters to okay that. Now, it may be a surprise to me that she's a board member of the Economic Vitality Corporation, which includes power industry people, but I don't hold that against her for that decision. She simply is to remove the critical habitat designation for the snowy plover. Now, I invite you all to come down and get involved as we take control of the estuary and get sustainable. Thank you for this opportunity to address the council.
Thank you.
Good evening. Roger Ewing, Morro Bay citizen. I'd like to address item D4, review of the annual water report as presented by the district attorney. With all due respect to staff, I would like to encourage you not to deny the public information about a very important resource, water. And in time, water will only become more important. Population increases, but water does not. So we should at all times know what is going on with our water supply, who's using it, how many equivalencies are being used and being set. And to deny the public the opportunity to know that, I think, is a mistake. Granted, you are being asked to prepare a report, but you are also being asked to eliminate the two public hearings during the year, which the public has an opportunity to know what's going on. We are short-staffed. We are short-funded. So I would like to see at least one meeting instead of two, or instead of none. Staff says the public doesn't really care because the public never gets up and speaks about it or asks about it. And that's mainly because the public never knows, one, that it's on the agenda or what it really means, or two, that they can get up and speak about it. So please do not deny us an opportunity to know what's going on with this very important resource. Give us a chance, an opportunity, at least to look at the report, at least to hear what's going on. Once a year. And as long as I have a few more moments, I'll take an opportunity and also address item C1, consideration of public education regarding resident survey and future consideration of a comprehensive city revenue program. Translated in plain citizen language, that means staff wants $75,000 more from the funds we don't have to fund a consulting team to teach us or to show us how to run a campaign to raise money through a city tax. We have a number of highly qualified, highly experienced citizens in our community that would be very happy to volunteer to get this campaign going and to get the election won and to get the tax into the coffers. I don't believe we need to spend another $75,000. You just 10, 15 minutes ago, Madam Mayor, said we don't have the funds to repair our streets. So where are you going to come up with $75,000 to give to a campaign team? It makes no sense, to me anyways. So I would ask you to cancel that. Let the word go out that we need help to get the campaign going, and you will find the help necessary. Thank you very much. Have a good meeting, and Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor Peters and council members. My name is Alex Beattie, and I do indeed live in Morro Bay. I'd like to share a few additional words with you about dog parks, tennis courts, and the recent grant the city received to build some. My understanding that the plan was to build them in Del Mar Park. City's got 8 tennis courts already. It's got 1 dog park. Of course, you
beneficial.
Beware of the proverbial Greeks bearing gifts. In excess of $250,000 must be appealing and tempting, but it's going to cost the city over $150,000 to get it. If past practice is any indication and cost overruns, it's going to cost even more. No place does it say in there how much it costs to maintain tennis courts. They're expensive, and I have some experience in this area. Tennis courts are not pleasant things to have in public parks. Imagine asphalt and 10-foot-high chain-link fences. Doesn't make parks more enjoyable, pleasant place to be. Do we need them? I think I sent you some information on that already. No, we don't. There must be much greater recreational needs, and I'm a recreational fan, within the city. Dog parks are one, trails are other.
And the people who are spending their time for a bell ringing. And it is a little difficult. Sometimes you go to the post office every day, twice a day sometimes, and it's a little difficult coming out there and you see a strange face and said, I already donated yesterday, sure, right? But I appreciate everybody who does that. The other thing is, like, speak on A3, parking and lieu fees. You know, once you take away that $13,000 or whatever it is.
It's park in lieu fees.
Park in lieu
Not
fees.
Parking, okay.
Park in lieu
okay.
fees? Am I understanding that it's not, it's park in lieu fees? Let me skip that and say I'm in favor of it. Sorry about that. Sorry about that. That's pretty good. It's pretty embarrassing. But anyways, I made a mistake. The last thing is I'm hoping that the city council, I know there's already one person who's trying to work on an initiative for the city council for elections, that if you proclaim that you're going to be running for city council and you're for mayor and you're already on the city council, then I believe that that seat should be given up. It's one of those things that have caused an awful lot of confusion in our past, and I'm hoping that we can do something that will take that away so there's no bickering in the end if there's some close votes. Even at that, as you noticed with the last time, even with a room full of people wanting a certain person to be there, that didn't take effect, so it's kind of null and void. So I'm hoping that some of the people here will take that by the horns and work with that, and hopefully that person who is working on that initiative will be coming forward soon. Wishing you all a Merry Christmas. I know this has been a big year for City of Morro Bay. One of the things I just heard there about what did Duke do? Well, Duke has been held down by legal actions through the rights of some people. And so that's why they haven't been able to produce. So, again, thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. A couple of things that need responding to. Mr. Deschler left, but my conversation with the representative at Cuesta, I told her that all of the cities in the county were considering a tax initiative on the November ballot, not the June ballot. It's never been considered for that. I did not say that we were absolutely doing it because we haven't decided all that yet. Rob, has Duke given us a check yet? Yes, I did sign the agreement.
Yes, and we've received the first payment that they were required to pay. They've paid, and that was in the amount of, I've got the check here, $846,576. The close to $1.5 million, the other $750,000 payments due January 21st. So
okay.
they met their obligation within 10 days and paid the amount that was due.
Thank you. Another correction on the Bird Festival growth. We are at capacity. We simply do not have enough local birder leaders to have any more events. We have 101 events this year, and we are using the high school for our evening events because there's no room in this room, which is the biggest one the city has to offer. So it is definitely not a matter of not wanting to get bigger. We are at capacity, and as a matter of fact, we're almost sold out. And the registration doesn't even close till the end of this month. So, and that's all I had. Anybody else have any responses? Bill?
Once again tonight, our role or our liaisonship, if you will, with the Pacific Legal Foundation has been incorrectly stated. What the Pacific Legal Foundation did was to file an action to ask the federal government to look at those species, not to get them declared off the list or whatever was alleged. So this is something that keeps coming up. I guess it makes good copy, but the bottom line is that's not what happened.
Any other responses? Okay. All right. We have issue C1, which is the consideration of the public education regarding resident survey and future consideration of a comprehensive city revenue program. The consultants on this are here and present, and they're trying to make an 8 o'clock plane. So with the council's approval, I would like to move this up to the first thing that we deal with. Is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Bob?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. As a start on our discussion, I'd like to introduce Catherine Liu of the Liu Edwards Group. Her firm has expertise in helping local governments like us understanding the nature of voter opinion, dialogue with residents on key issues, and success with revenue measures like the one we are contemplating. We would like to start tonight's discussion with a review of the recent Morro Bay voter poll, and she's
Could I just add one thing here? We do have the entire information, and how many pages is it?
It's 450, I think.
Okay. It is available at City Hall. If anybody wants to go through the 450 pages, you feel free. It is there.
It is the size of a very thick phone book, I'm afraid.
If I could jump in just real quickly, too, though, Bob delivered to me the PowerPoint slides that you showed us at the last meeting, which were very good. And it's much shorter than 400.
And then I have some strategic recommendations for next steps. So the first is that, as some of us have discussed, a general-purpose sales tax simple majority requirement measure is feasible in November 2006, provided that your community is methodically educated and informed about the needs to be addressed in the measure. We also, as you might recall, considered different funding options linked to specific services like public safety and also linked to different funding mechanisms such as a general obligation bond or fire safety parcel tax. Unfortunately, the two-thirds requirement measures such as a special purpose sales tax and a bond are not viable at this time. However, if in the judgment of this council you might opt to go forward at a future time for a fire safety parcel tax, that may be viable down the line. It is our judgment that November 06 may be a little too soon for that. Your community would appreciate and would respond to additional education about those needs.
Going to some of the key priorities that your constituents identified in the course of the survey, and because this council is out and about in the community, none of these things come as surprises to you, I'm certain. But your respondents do feel strongly that fire-related improvements, repairs, and upgrades are priorities. Although, by law, funds from a general purpose measure cannot be dedicated to specific programs or services, your measure can appropriately cite examples of the key fire safety improvements and needs that will be addressed by the measure. The key highlights of the survey, once again, it was conducted in the latter part of September, though the information is quite voluminous and did take many hours to compile. And we did interview 400 Morro Bay City voters with a margin of error plus or minus 4.9%. A summary was provided to the local media and is available at City Hall for public review. I have three-page summaries available here if any members of the public would like them. The job performance ratings, your public safety, hardworking men and women in your fire and police departments, enjoyed very strong job ratings. As you can see, looking at the dark blue and light blue graphs there, in excess of two-thirds, your constituents do hold their work in very high regard. And actually, the entire job performance rating here in the city is very strong, even going down to less well-known departments, such as the Parks and Rec Department, enjoys an excellent or very good rating in excess of a majority. And the Morro Bay City Council as a whole, many residents were simply unable to rate your current performance because they are unaware of the intricate workings of the City Council. So that's how I would rank that one. Going on to the right direction, wrong track. One very important element that I would like to call your attention to on this slide is we do see a pretty even split. City of Morro Bay, 41% right direction, 39% wrong track. That is a higher level of concern and pessimism about the direction of the city than we've seen in some of the other communities in your region and some of the other communities in California. I would not cite that this finding reflects a lack of confidence in city government at all, but a concern over the city's well-publicized fiscal challenges and financial difficulties. And as we go through the findings on the other graphs, you will find that to be so. The most serious problems facing people living in Morro Bay, this graph reinforces what I just said a moment ago. Look at state budget deficit. Two-thirds of your constituents have identified that as a very serious problem. And I would venture to say that because the state budget deficit ranked so strongly and so high, budget issues and the ability to protect and maintain our core services are clearly at the top of mind of your constituents. And then some of the issues that your other speakers referenced, including runoff, clean water, came in, the health of marine life came in as a second issue of concern. Again, the third issue of concern, state budget cuts affecting the ability of Morro Bay to fully fund vital city services, extremely or very serious problem identified by many of your constituents. Having enough firefighters and fire engines to respond, and the future of the concern about Morro Bay, some of the related facts. The red and pink graphs indicate the extremely and very serious concern. So obviously the age of our fire station, the fact that our city is experiencing significant growth, and the ability of our fire safety services to keep up with that growth, and the ability of our fire department to be able to respond quickly to those calls are all issues that resonate very strongly with your constituents. Through the course of the public opinion research, we did ask your constituents three times how they would, what their attitudes were and how they would vote on a potential measure. This graph shows the vote progression over three asks during the survey on a simple majority requirement general purpose sales tax. And as you can see, the vote starts at 57%, yes, that's the top blue graph there, then goes to 60 after receiving various types of information, and then goes back down to 58% on the third ask. Now, do remember that the margin of error is about 5%, and so it's difficult to know exactly where they fall, but it is clear that there is adequate potential should you decide to proceed with a general purpose sales tax. By reason of comparison, going to the next slide, the vote progression for a $95 annual public safety parcel tax, this measure requires a two-thirds vote. And as you can see, by the third ask, we are at 54% support. So we are full 13 percentage points below where we need to be. So if the council wished to consider this funding mechanism for the future, more time would be needed to provide information to your community about the types of things that this parcel tax would fund. Going on to the credibility of key organizations and public figures and the types of individuals whose perspectives would be most meaningful to your community. Obviously, your fire chief, because public safety and fire safety is such a great concern, would be a very important messenger, as is your police chief. Library stakeholders, the mayor, and your local newspapers also are outlets or mechanisms that your constituents would look to for information. Key demographic groups who moved. Movement is very important to consider in these types of planning measures. A strong public information campaign can increase awareness among Morro Bay constituents. After hearing facts and methodical information about Morro Bay's service needs, levels of support for a finance measure increased as much as 22% among key demographic groups who begin with lukewarm support and comprise a significant percentage of your electorate. So this graph summarizes, we're able to do additional analysis over the last few weeks. It was a lot of information to digest. But certain audiences, certain profiles of constituents, those who earn $25,000 to $35,000 per year are a very important audience because they need more information about the measure before they're prepared to be supportive. As you can see by this graph, they begin with support that's within the margin of error for the viability of the measure. After hearing additional information, they move 22 percentage points, a very significant margin of difference. It is clear that this group of constituents needs very focused and highly targeted information. Parents of kids under 18 living at home, the movement there is just shy of 20%. Renters, the same. 18 to 49-year-olds, the movement is 14%, and there is some movement that is experienced among men. The real important significance of this information on this slide is simply this. Very general types of information that are disseminated may not be effective with your electorate because having done these types of finance measures in a number of communities, we do find that different constituents integrate community input in a highly targeted manner, and build broad-based consensus, while bearing in mind that your information campaign does need to be focused to key constituents. Informing the public about fire safety needs that will be funded by your measure, and including strong fiscal accountability provisions. Utilizing your police and fire chiefs to speak directly about the needs, and discussing how any funds generated by measure will be spent prudently and well. The importance of messaging to a viable measure. In order to maintain the viability that we see in the survey, we must be able to discuss the essential needs with urgency and utilize a very clear messaging platform. Empower our safety officials to discuss those needs, highlight fiscal accountability, and explain how the city's financial problems are related to the state budget deficit. There is enormous concern in your community over the state budget deficit and very clear interest about how that deficit might have affected us locally. It's very important that we tell our story to our constituents about how it is that we find ourselves in the challenging position that we are today. And training our messengers and our staff team and members of our city family on how best to explain the information simply is critical to your effort. Communications pitfalls. I would boil this down to my earlier statement. One size does not fit all. It is very important. The moms and dads of the young kids will need different types of information than renters, than those that are of the income group, 25 to 35,000, 35 to 45,000. It would be a fallacy to presume that everyone is interested in the exact same thing. And methodically building consensus among members of your diverse community becomes very important. Common mistakes. There are mistakes that other cities that have not been successful have commonly engaged in. The first is that, and we have this information from the League of California Cities. Our organization is one of the lead trainers for the League statewide in helping to advise communities all over, whether they're coastal or in the Central Valley or in the urban centers, about how best to plan for these things. But a common mistake that we've frequently seen with unsuccessful cities is that an assumption is made that residents already understand the city's needs. So truly, one might think of this from the standpoint that there are 200 or 300 folks that are active in the community that perhaps have the time and the ability to keep informed about what is facing the city at any given moment. But there's thousands of additional average citizens who have busy lives and day-to-day responsibilities, and getting their attention is far more difficult. And getting their attention will be critical in any effort. Only outreaching to those that are already informed or those who are just in agreement with us is another common problem. Taking the media for granted. We obviously want to keep the media informed on a very proactive basis about our planning and provide them with the facts and information about why it is that we might be considering different options at this time. Doing it on your own. This is a statistic that we at the League of California Cities has shared with many other cities around the state. In 2004, there were 228 local measures on the March and November ballots, but about 60% of those failed. According to League of California Cities staff, the mass majority of those are run in cities who didn't utilize expertise in their planning efforts. Outside considerations. There are external factors outside of what's happening in the city of Morro Bay that will affect your planning, including statewide races and events, and even other finance measures within the county. So those types of nuances and environmental factors are very important to incorporate into your planning. And do understand that public opinion is fluid and shifting. Any public information campaign must be effective in addressing a fluid, shifting, and ever-changing environment.
There are recommended project benchmarks and timetable considerations. Depending on what the council's decision is this evening, you would dedicate the rest of this month perhaps to finalizing your 2006 outreach plan, and then really take the months January through June to launch your speakers bureau, issue your community and opinion leader updates, gather appropriate, begin deployment of your city pre-election planning effort. And with that, I will pause for questions and discussion with the city council as you feel appropriate.
Okay, any questions? I have one on something you just said. You said you engaged 2,000 residents in San Luis Obispo County. How do you do that?
Well, it's a very empowering and labor-intensive effort, which is multidisciplinary in nature. So we have a team that we've been working with in the city that has deployed itself on dozens of community presentations and outreach to organizations. And then we actually distribute additional surveys in those presentations and encourage participants to write back in. Okay. We've also sponsored community forums. The local newspaper has assisted us with that. Mm-hmm. We've also issued written mailers and communications with the public and asked them to write back in with their comments. Then we've taken those hundreds of comments and actually coded which priorities the constituents identified. We've also been driving the public towards the city's website, where there are other interactive mechanisms for the public to write in on. And we've also been writing back to those that have written us mm-hmm. with their comments and questions. So it's a very exciting and dynamic process, but it is one that is quite robust.
So that's what you mean by the fluidity of the opinion. In other words, what San Luis and their initial survey found out, has it changed throughout that interaction?
Yes, from the standpoint that in the case of San Luis Obispo, we actually began 3 years ago on their effort to evaluate the viability of a funding measure. Mm-hmm. And actually, 3 years ago, support was strong for a two-thirds requirement measure. And then we saw shifts in public attitude as things completely unrelated to San Luis Obispo occurred. So even things like, the number of finance measures on the last statewide mm-hmm. ballot, as events occurred with the war in Iraq and national events and the economy shifting, those also affected the attitudes. Here, I think that we're in a very interesting political time because the partisanship that we're seeing in Sacramento and the bickering and even the recent special election has changed the nature of the environment and created a level of cynicism towards government that has been unprecedented in our recent memory. But counterbalancing that is a real desire and concern among residents for local control and protecting our local services.
Okay. Other questions? None? Okay. Bob, where do we go with this then?
Well, we are now at a point where we need to make a decision whether to move forward or not. And we think that the city council, I guess, is a first order of business, should decide whether or not it's important or a priority for the city to have a new revenue measure. The city has, in a general sense, said to staff that you wanted to explore additional revenue opportunities and find ways to maximize revenues to the city. It would appear from the information we have now that a general revenue measure, sales tax measure, is feasible for us. The question would be of council, do you want to then pursue that or continue to pursue it? If you do, it would be my recommendation that you use professional people to guide our hand in the dialogue we would have with our residents and voters about what that issue would mean. And that would mean that we, in the short run, would need to spend money to pay the cost of a campaign. That money would be difficult for us to come by. However, in my view, I think it is a reasonable investment because we're stacking that up against the long-term viability of the city and an income stream that would come to us year after year. The decision obviously is yours. My recommendation to you would be that you would go forward with this, and I think that your chances of being ultimately successful with the measure are greatly enhanced if you do.
Okay, I've got another question about the costs, and we have a budget here. Mailings, questions?
Well, I'm just concerned that Catherine makes her flight.
Right, I know, and that's what I'm trying to get to.
Councilwoman, I'm greatly appreciative of the accommodation and time. I also recognize that in due respect to the community and to yourselves, I don't want to run out prematurely. I would prefer to robustly and adequately answer all of your questions and do that. So that's
all
my
right.
First priority.
Well, if there's any other questions, then I would just say we'll go ahead and have our discussion. And if questions come up at the time, we'll ask them. And if you have to leave, please feel free to do so. We understand mm-hmm. that and yeah. appreciate your being here. Okay. So I guess our first question is, do we want to move forward with this initiative? I'm trying to remember from the mayor's meeting how many have actually decided yes, they are. San Luis, obviously. Do you know that? How many of the cities have decided to go ahead with it?
San Luis Obispo has definitely decided to go forward. Right. I can't speak for the other cities. I do know that Grover Beach, who sends their regards, by the way, will be taking action in January to deploy themselves on the process. But the council did act to indicate that they would be investing funds and driving towards a November 06 okay. election.
I think all of them have been pretty much in favor. I don't remember how many have actually voted for it. Paso may have. I'm not sure.
I think I'll reserve it for my comments, but I actually have the article about to sell a tax rise, cities put out the dough, and it has a chart here talking about it and some comments from Paso.
Okay.
They're not
okay.
going to do this.
They haven't yet? Okay.
They will not do this. Paso will not do this, is what the quote says in here.
Who's the quote?
But I was so shocked that I still had this paper at home. But I do have large
and
stacks.
And what's the date on that? I mean, that's not what I've heard from their mayor. But
October okay. 22nd.
Okay.
2 months ago. Paso Robles is not willing to dip into its coffers to pull its residents or hire a consultant. City officials say that because they don't want to say that's because they don't want to sway voters one way or the other, only educate them on both sides of the issue. This is the city manager, Jim App, says we're trying to engage in honest debate. We don't want to be stumping the issue. Instead, the city will rely on officials and volunteers to spread the word and may send a letter to residents. And this
okay,
is from a city that's in a sea of sales tax.
Okay, we're talking about different things, though. The sales tax measure, they're not saying they're not going to go for the measure. They're just saying they're not going to use a consultant to get
yes,
there.
Yes, which I think is what we're talking about tonight, whether or not to hire a consultant. And then
no, first of all, we have to decide if we want to go for the measure.
Oh, well. No. You've got me on that.
No?
No, wouldn't decide the measure until sometime in June or July. And in fact,
oh, I know,
once you
I know,
do
as
decide,
far as putting it on the ballot.
Once you do decide to put it on the ballot, then you cannot use any more public funds.
Well, I don't know. I think you're out of the room, Rob. I did ask them for direction to continue their efforts on this
yes.
and give us an indication
that's
of whether
what you're
or not
looking
this
for.
Was a priority for the city.
Correct.
Which is direction as to whether or not we would participate with a consultant or which
correct.
Of these work plans we would pursue.
Ultimately, would be.
Because
correct.
I think if we reach some kind of consensus on whether or not we're on board, Rob might tell us that we can't spend any more public money on it. And I don't know if we are doing that tonight or if we're deciding.
I'm hearing two different things. Let's get mm-hmm. this settled. One, first of all, Janice is right. She asked, are we going to pursue this initiative, idea,
right.
period.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then you brought in the discussion about Paso Robles and that got out off somewhere. We need to come back to whether or not we're going to put this on the ballot in November next year.
And so that issue isn't in front of you tonight, whether you're going to put it on the ballot.
That's the first thing we need to do. Go ahead, Janice. Let's go on.
That's not in front of us tonight.
No.
Saying. Right. Okay.
No, the decision to put it on the ballot will be when the ballot language is in front of you and right. You're making that decision to send it on to the county.
So the decision we have to make tonight is whether we want to continue to pursue this based on the results of the survey that we did.
Correct.
Okay.
And what is this then?
This is putting the initiative on the ballot. I mean, that is a step towards that.
Yes.
But it isn't your ultimate decision of whether it will be on the ballot.
Right.
I mean, yes.
Or what the wording will be.
But certainly after the public community outreach,
right.
It might be determined not to put it on the ballot. So this isn't your final decision to put on the ballot, but it's the second step. You did your first step, which was to do the survey. Now the second step is to do further outreach, further community involvement, further education purposes to ultimately put it on the ballot.
Also, Madam Mayor, I would point out that you don't know at this point what the measure would say,
the language
of the measure would say, and hopefully at the end of this process you would have a much better idea.
So we just have to decide, yes, we want to pursue this further, or no, we don't want to pursue it. And had the survey showed that we had a 95% against the idea, we probably would drop it right now. But given the results of the survey, I think that's the first thing we have to decide. Yes, I read a quote already. So. Oh, wait. Okay, Bill.
I'm intrigued and basically enthused, if you will, regarding the results of the survey. I would like to move ahead, but I'm a little bit gun-shy at that amount, the 75. I just don't know where we're going to get it, and I know that if we do get it from somewhere, we're going to have to listen to Jim tell us it was no place we could get it from. But I would like to move forward. I just wish it weren't quite so much money.
Betty?
I believe that we have such expertise in this community that I would like to see us do this pursuit with volunteers.
That?
Yeah, the question, if we're going to pursue the idea, is really, is it worth $75,000 to try to ensure that the measure passes, in which case we will be looking at it some in excess of $700,000 per year, if I'm right in reading the staff report. To me, that's a small amount of money to invest in such an accomplishment. Now, I don't know where the money's going to come from. I don't have a secret bank account someplace the city can tie into. But we are going to look next month at the budget again, mid-year. Mm-hmm. And I think at that point, and that's a month away, we'll have a better idea of where it might come from, what we might have to do to raise it, and I would be willing to go ahead based on that idea.
I got a raised eyebrow from Jim. Did you want to say something, Mr. Kosher?
If you don't mind my interjecting into the debate, I firmly believe that the success of any of these types of measures requires the assistance of professionals. I would view this as what the city manager said is an investment, what Councilmember Baxley referred to as an investment, and I know it goes against my grain to be saying this kind of thing. but I believe that we've tried the other alternative a number of years ago, and it fell flatly on its face. As a matter of fact, ironically, it was 57% against a sales tax increase when we took it up. Maybe 5 years ago. And that was because, I believe, because we did it ourselves and we didn't know how to do it. Mm-hmm. So that's my two cents.
Thank you. I'd add to that, too, in considering this, we have to look at this breakdown. $45,000 is their consulting fee. The rest of it, we can't avoid. No matter who does it, we're going to have to pay those mailing things. We're going to have to do additional polling. We're going to have to do the data. And it actually,
without their consulting, we would still have to do a lot of other things on our own. And I just don't know if $45,000, which is the thing that the consultant fee encompasses, is too big a price to pay to get this done right.
Madam Mayor?
Yes.
I would present the counter-argument that, and I stated this before, that this community is unique. In the last election, when we did ballot measures, we were the only county, we were the only city in the county that passed the library initiative, that passed the measure regarding GE-free elements in the community, and that we are, I think, very unique. We have, regardless of who you are up here, you've got different people working for you, and I think we are united that this is a necessary thing. Therefore, I think the people that back us would be united, this community would be united that this is a necessary thing, just as the library initiative was. And I, and with as high a percent as we're starting with, I think that we will only go higher. I don't think that we will fall back. So I think that those of us who are campaigners and those who have backed us as managers and hard workers, that this is something that we can do. We're not a large community. We're not, you know, Fresno or Visalia or, and, you know, this money, I think, as well, if you look at the budget, is not a solid figure. It also includes any expenses are not included in the $74,000, planes, rooms, that kind of thing. So I don't think, I think this is a minimum figure. It's not the maximum that we would be spending. And I think we can do this without the consultant fee easily for half of this if we wanted to invest any city money. I'm not sure we need
to kind of confuse with more information rises from 9 to 16. When Catherine was giving her presentation tonight, the first time we ask, we get 57. The second time we ask, we get 60 with, you know, those more information, but the third time, 58. So the notion that we might do a whole lot of mailers starts to make me feel like we're going to start to irritate people. The fact that we are going to put out money that we don't have, that we need so badly, $75,000 would pay for a position in this town, a couple of them actually in a few departments, that if the public gets a sense of us doing this, you know, instead of pulling up our belts and recognizing, I think, a really important statement in the attached report here. It says in the very first paragraph of the attachment that the survey results show that a solid majority of Morro Bay voters support an increase. This suggests that if an election was held today and the half-cent sales tax measure was on the ballot, it would pass, as this requires a simple majority. And so I kind of wonder, like, why don't we go ahead and do it? And do it in June. And I know that there's some concern out there about competing with Cuesta, for example, but we're such a small contingent of the voting population in the county, I mean, 6,200 registered voters or something, that we're not going to harm that initiative like somebody like San Luis Obispo or Paso would. And also, this notion about doing it locally, I mean, there's a water bill, there's a town hall meeting, which I didn't see those in the cost factors here, but there's also yourself, Mayor Peters. I was talking to a Rotary Club member the other day, and she said that you showed up at Rotary Club and gave this smashing talk about the sales tax measure. And I mean, we have the representatives here in town. We've got Mike Pond, who could go out and meet with, but the thing is, we've got to tighten our belts and can't be spending money on consultants, because you've seen the responses, Catherine, about how they feel about money and they want audits and all that other stuff. I think we've got a population that is willing. They see the writing on the wall. They see the whole county going for it. Even business people should be assured they can't travel from here to Atascadero or San Luis Obispo and get a lower tax rate. They're all going up. They've already gone up in San Diego. They've already gone up in the Bay Area. We don't need to spend extra money to convince people who are already convinced.
Okay, I want to respond
Madam
to that.
Madam Mayor, if I could, just, and the city attorney may also have a comment on this. Unfortunately, we don't have the option of proceeding in June because we're looking at a general purpose
requirement measure.
It has to be regularly.
It has to be a regularly scheduled municipal election. And by point of clarification, please understand that I want to be very respectful, as I feel our organization has been, of this mayor and this council's ultimate decision. So whatever your decision is, we will be very supportive of you and wish you every success. Having said that, I think it is important for me to clarify on a professional basis what poll results mean. Poll results are only a snapshot of the actual day in which they're taken. And so they are viewed as a barometer of, yes, what the result would be if the election were held that day. As such, they are good predictors of what may happen in the future. But we have seen other agencies with two-thirds, who enjoy two-thirds support in the polls, and come election day couldn't even squeak out a simple majority vote because time and months had gone by and the environment had shifted. A good example of this occurred during the tragic national events of 9/11, where obviously the tragedies had no immediate effect per se on the local communities in which we're doing work, but affected the national consciousness of what was deemed a priority at that time. We saw enormous shifts in the environment during that time. In other cases, we've seen other jurisdictions where 65% support ended up being 48% on election day because of the luck of the draw of what else ended up being on the ballot for that given election in other nearby jurisdictions in the county in question and even on the statewide measure. So I just felt that it was important to convey that so that you could make your decision on the best basis of the best information possible. I would note, by way of clarification, I noted that the 45, and so the truth is we are parsing words. So one phrase could yield X percentage support, while another phrase stated differently could result in X percentage support 7 points below or 7 points above. No doubt members of this council and other community stakeholders are fully equipped to do a fabulous job describing the city's needs. I like to think of our organization as simply adding structure, value, and a little bit of training so that everyone's playing on the same sheet of music and comfortable with what it is they're describing.
Well, I want to respond to something that you said about my speaking at Rotary. I did indeed speak at Rotary, and I was vehemently vehemently challenged by a member of the business community who said, this is going to kill my business, and absolutely I and others in this community are going to oppose it right and left. So that is something that I hadn't anticipated and was something that I would certainly want somebody to help us with. You know, we have major problems with our communication with our businesses already. We're seen as not business supportive, whether that rightly or wrongly, that's the impression that people have of Morro Bay. And I think that that's something that we would definitely have to correct, or we're going to have a group out there opposing this and actively opposing it and opposing it with money. So, you know, behind their opposition, I'm saying. So that was a real wake-up call to me to, okay, I just stepped out there and put my foot in this and, whoa, that's hot water. So it is something that we do need education on. Now, whether that education comes from us within or from an expert who knows what they're talking about is another situation. But I kind of was going where Thad went in that we have our mid-year review coming up in January. I think that as small a community as we are, we could maybe wait until then and make our decision based on how things look at that time. I'm very surprised in Mr. Kosher's comments
And that carries a lot of weight with me because he never says spend money. So I would like to, you know, if the council would like a little time to cogitate on this, and a couple of other things too. Maybe this is the chance for us, if we do put it off a little bit, to see what we can get from within the community. If there is parts of this, if there are parts of this that can be done within the community and still use the consultants for when we need that expert advice. I happened to get a couple of emails from the mayor of the city of Dinuba who had come here to visit, and just, I didn't know that they were going to be on this report, but I've been corresponding with him by email. And I would love to find out what his experience was. And perhaps we can just do a little background research between now and January and make this decision then. Is that something that the council would... Dad doesn't want to do that.
It's before us. We've looked at it. We've listened to the consultation. And I'm ready to make a motion to move on this thing.
Well, it just went down $10,000, too, which was...
Well, that's nice. Even better investment, isn't it?
Madam Mayor, because you mentioned Dinuba, our city manager had asked me to bring a couple of comparables from other communities closer to the size of Morro Bay. Dinuba has 6,000 voters and spent $95,000 on their finance measure effort. The city of Big Bear Lake has 4,000 voters, and their planning effort will cost $105,000. So just to give you those comparables.
Wow.
The other thing about those comparables is to know what the mood is there about the city spending and city planning and that kind of thing, but we can't know all of those things. So,
No, I will say, though, that there, in both cases, their survey results were comparable to yours, and that it showed support at the time that the survey was taken. The planning effort was to make certain that the issues continued as top of mind issues with the constituents throughout the course of the planning process. With the diversity of issues in today's environment, the danger of other things percolating, bubbling up to the top becomes a concern for the average mom or dad that has an overflowing plate.
I have a question.
Yes, please.
How much, I don't know if to ask Ms. Liu or Mr. Hendricks, how much has the consultation so far cost?
I think it was $25,000 plus expenses.
Okay.
And we paid for, I believe, one additional trip down here that we did not plan.
Okay. And then there's this $65,000 or $75,000. And then isn't there a third step also?
This would take you to the point of the decision whether or not to place the measure on the ballot. And once you do that, the city is not allowed to spend more money on the
to that.
Of course, if you see what happens, it's where you lost the election. Then you come back and say, oops. I mean, that's a fear I have. That may not be what you're...
Yeah, I'm sure.
But if you get to the point where you see there's a problem, it's probably too late to do anything about it.
Yeah, see, and I felt with the major, library major, Major L, and then the other one, that it was always kind of behind. We always thought we weren't going to make it, and then and the community was, of course, the library will make it, and then everybody else didn't make it. So I think that we've learned from that. You know, I would hope that we've learned from that as campaigners, as politicos, that you become more cautious. You touch more of your bases. She's given us so much information that we can use to run a campaign that I feel very comfortable that this will be successful.
But with the library, you didn't have anybody opposing it. You know, it was strictly a vote for it or not, but there was nobody saying, don't do this.
Mm-hmm.
It's the wrong thing, and mounting a campaign against it. And that's what we face here.
Well,
Madam
Mayor,
may I make a motion?
The GE one certainly did have opposition, and yet we overcame that.
Go ahead.
Okay. I move that the City Council approve moving forward with a comprehensive public education and community outreach program about the city's fiscal situation by approving items 1 and 2 on page 1 of the staff report.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
All right, discussion?
Yes.
Melody?
Plenty. Well, once again, we're going to okay something based on funny money or imaginary money. I was surprised, actually, to hear Mr. Kozer say that. When we get to the... A quick question for Mr. Kozer. When we get to the mid-year review, and if we're in the red, then 400,000 or so, which is about what we're at now. And I think there was a an article in the Tribune a week ago last Saturday on the 3rd of December that said that we have fallen in revenue. We're below Grover now. If we're in the red at mid-year review, do we have to pay our bills then and come up to balance using our reserves, including this bill?
If indeed we are in the red, the only resource we have would be the reserves.
And so that would draw down reserves by policy, I think, to bring us up again.
Yes.
Madam Mayor, may I make a comment
you
about
may.
That? In my view, this what we're contemplating here is a one-time expenditure, and it's being contemplated with the idea of improving the financial well-being of the city in the future and its ability to carry out services. It seems to me that this is a viable use of reserves, as opposed to the thing we complain about with the council all the time, which is using reserves or one-time money for ongoing operating expenses. This is a one-time expense. And it's, and it, as somebody characterized it, an investment to hopefully successfully get for the city a revenue stream in the future that will help us carry out services. So my personal belief is that it's a viable use of reserves.
And then my second comment, I think just in the middle, I'll just insert that I am fully in favor of an increase to the sales tax. I mean, it's nuts that we don't. So we have to, and I think people understand that. So I just want to make this one last comment, that if we vote to not use a consultant tonight, we can actually use this ad campaign next year. We can put an ad in the paper. We can put a postcard in their mailbox next October late, because I ran a campaign too. And the advertisement would simply say this: we didn't hire a consultant last year because we knew we could trust you this year. Vote yes. And people will respond to that.
Other comments? I'm just absolutely opposed to this spending of money. Just absolutely. And we have other measures coming up later tonight that we're going to be spending money again. We don't have money. I'm just shocked that we would do this.
All right. Then how would you expect us to promote this further? I mean, we're talking about $35,000. Do you expect us to do it with no mailings, no data, no press,
no
nothing?
I have no preconceived way of how we would do this. I have a general idea of how we would do this. I think we would get people together like Grace Melton, who have run successful campaigns on issues as well as on people. We would get together different people that have done that they could sit down and say, this is our campaign plan, this is how we think it should happen. City, we need this much money if you want us to educate the public. In truth, I'm not sure we ought to be, how much do we participate? We're walking this fine line. Are we promoting initiative or are we educating? And I think that's real critical to know where we are with that. And I think if the citizens are telling the citizens that that's more effective than saying a consultant is telling us how to do this. This is a smart community. You know, they know which side, you know, who's doing what. And
and how would you handle the opposition from the business community?
As well as the sales tax increase. So I'm going to wait till we agendize future items, but there is a discussion we need to have along those lines.
I would totally agree with that, and that needs to be public and with us.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And then that would be an educational process.
I call the question.
I have one more question I'd like to ask Mr. Kosher, if you don't mind.
One more?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Our budget projections, as they exist now, do you feel that a $65,000 addition or subtraction to that come mid-year budget review would be crucial one way or the other?
Given that we have actually received a portion of the money from Duke and the balance of the money is due on January 21st, we should have a definite answer as to whether or not we're going to have a deficit at that point. We will be walking a fine line under the best of circumstances. But
if that money comes in, does that eliminate our red ink?
Yes.
And will this put us back
for the current budget, for the current year budget, including the expenditures that you're talking about tonight.
Okay, so that would put us on an even keel.
Yes.
Thank you. Okay.
Just a final comment, if you want to postpone the decision to January, I would support that.
Okay. All right, calling the question. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
No. Okay, 3-2. Okay. Thank you very much, Catherine.
Thank you for your commendation.
And thank you
for the discount. I appreciate the questions for the debate. I look forward to working with each other.
Now that you've missed your airplane.
Yes, let's take a quick break. All right. I'm sorry? Oh, you're welcome. We just had our little Christmas cookie treat here. Okay. Consent agenda. Oh, wait. Wait. First is future agenda items, isn't it? Yes. Council declaration of future agenda items. Okay. Melody?
Well, I'd like to try to agendize that tennis court question about usage data because I've gotten the emails that you all have gotten. And I think it might be worth looking at the usage of Monte Young and getting a staff report back about, you know, how much are they used, what are people thinking, an update on the whole.
Andrea, is the Recreation and Parks Commission going to be dealing with that? Should we wait until we get information from them or not?
We can certainly take a staff report to the commission. They weren't planning on it, though, looking at usage. It's the grant basically, some of you will recall prior to applying for the grant, we had a number of public hearings on tennis courts and the need for tennis courts in Morro Bay, and that's what started the whole process of getting the grant. So at this point, in the future, we're looking at some time to calendar it in to the capital projects. But if the council's interested in us looking at usage, certainly could do that.
Okay. Do we have a couple of other council people who agree with that one? I'll go along with it. I'm curious. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Other future agenda? Bruce? Where'd that come from? Bill?
Thank you. I would like to agendize a council discussion on our relationship with the community's businesses, how we're perceived by them, and how we can improve our image with business as a whole. I know, for example, we have a reputation outside of the county as not being the city you want to start a business, and that's why we don't get a lot of, like, the large corporations with their franchises and stuff. At least I've been told that. I was told that actually by the gentleman whose property is going to have the dollar type store. He said it was a harder sell because it was Morro Bay, and we have that reputation. I know we've had someone up here saying they wanted to expand their business in Morro Bay, who has a business in Morro Bay and couldn't afford to do it because of the parking fees, the in-lieu parking fees, and in response to that, we raised them. So I don't know. I think we need to look at the whole thing, see what it is. It's not necessarily a person that's easy to discuss his business with, but the bottom line is that was a feeling that they came away with. And again, I'm not in any way trying to cast aspersions on the various city departments, because I know we have set up rules, regulations, they follow them. And it may be that it's just all sour grapes, I don't know, but we need to find out.
Well, again, I'm just trying to figure out what it is that you, will you do a report on it then for our discussion points?
I can try. I think that...
I totally support this, but I'm not sure how we're going to get the information.
I'm not sure either. I mean, that's why I'm sitting here treading water. I'm not sure where to go. I know the problem's out there. I'm not sure what to do about it or where we even begin.
What if we did outreach to them for that town hall meeting at the end of January and made sure that the chamber and all publicized it and got business people to come talk with us? make a list of their concerns.
That could be a start.
Okay.
Would you want to do that before you get it agendized then, or just make sure it's on the agenda tracking list, and then we'll have it on the agenda subject to the general meeting?
I'm not sure
what kind of... Instead of having this discussion about it right now, why don't we just put it on the agenda to discuss it and then bring the stuff with us?
There you go.
Okay. All right, but no staff report required. You'll just do something for discussion.
Okay. And some outreach for that town hall meeting, I think.
Yeah, we got to work on that anyway.
Yeah.
Betty?
Yes, I would like to agendize what is kind of a continuation of our conversation about affordable and sustainable housing from our last city council meeting. And the second part of that didn't take place. On my report, I had said that I'd like to, after we have the presentation by Mr. Robertson and Mr. Rio, that we take the next step about how we want to address that. And that didn't happen because of the huge length of that meeting. So for the first meeting in January, I'd like to have this put back on the agenda.
No, I'm not sure what it is.
I'm so sorry. It's the affordable and sustainable housing presentation that we had at the last city council meeting, that be the next steps to that be discussed at the first meeting in January. I also would like to, I should have checked with this beforehand. Mr. Algert, the annexation issue that was referred to Harbor Board, I watched the meeting. They'll be sending us a letter, so I don't need to agendize that.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. It's my memory that we forwarded a memo to you on the Harbor Advisory Board's position that evening.
Already? Okay.
Yes.
Then I would like to agendize a discussion of that letter.
Okay. The letter itself.
The letter from Harbor Advisory Board with regard to annexation and any further conversation we may want to have about annexation.
Well, I thought we were holding off on that whole issue of annexation until after the 6 months, the report that's coming out.
Yeah.
LAFCO.
Yeah.
LAFCO. There had an earlier been a decision to wait for LAFCO to reach us. We're the next in line for review of our sphere of influence, and the LAFCO staff, I believe, will come and do their thing with you, and you'll get a fairly complete explanation of the process and the implications of annexation and what can and can't be done, those kinds of things.
Then I'll restrict my agenda item to the letter, which I think had a specific recommendation in it with regard to the Back Bay.
I don't know. Yeah, okay.
Okay, do we have support?
And then
I'd give support to both of those, particularly the affordable housing presentation. I felt bad that there was a presentation and no discussion because of the nature of the evening. Yeah. But I'd lend support to that one for sure.
All right, so with a letter, it's just there's no staff report. We just bring forward the letter for discussion.
And I'll write whatever needs to go along with that.
All right.
But
as far as the other one, that Mel, you're going with a bunch of them. Let's get approval on each. As far as the one about the housing, yes, I agree, too, and I wanted to kind of piggyback on that. Just in general, at our first meeting in January, I would like us to come to some conclusions about direction to the Planning Commission so that when we have our joint meeting with them, which hopefully we'll decide a date later this evening, we have an actual agenda and a goal to what we want to accomplish there so that it's not just a bunch of talk and nothing gets decided. So that, I think, would be part of it because they had that presentation as well. So I'd like to have that all wound together.
Do you want that as one report?
Madam Mayor, with three of you interested in this item, then I'm assuming that you wish the staff to create a staff report on the issue.
I don't know if we need a staff report on it because we had the reports from them. It's basically where do we want to go with it. And so if staff has comments on what would be practical here, you know, as far as community housing, some of the things just don't apply because we don't have the space for them or the ability to do them. But if you wanted to do
housing concept, and that didn't get fully explored in the presentation, and I think you wanted to pick up there, but it seems like if you want to have a discussion about what you think are the issues that you'd like to have discussed, that may be a separate item.
Okay. All right. We can do it as separate. But okay, then again, I'm trying to clarify what needs staff reports and what doesn't. So Betty's discussion on those two issues, we would like a staff
comments anyway as to what would be achievable here on those programs. Does that sound good?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then the other agenda item will be items to discuss with the Planning Commission, and that we'll do ourselves. But any suggestions that you have on issues that have come up in Planning Commission discussions that they need direction from us on, that would be good to have for that one. Okay. Was that your last one?
Mm-hmm.
Dad?
Not at this time.
Okay.
I forgot one.
Okay.
I was eating this great cookie and forgot entirely that I'd like to agendize a discussion of joining the Clean Cities Coalition.
Right.
It does not have to be at the January meeting, but I would like to get it jumped onto the agenda tracking and sooner or later talk about it.
Okay. And we can do that off the website, right? Just find
the
information?
Yeah, it's c5.org, I think.
Okay. All right. So we don't need a report. You'll just do a little memo about it, and we'll get the research, or...
I think I sent it out to everybody, but I could send it out again, their website. And whenever Bob wants to put it on the agenda, we could talk about what we think and see what we want to do.
All right.
I don't think it really requires a whole lot of us staff
reporting. No. Okay. So much for future agendas. Consent calendar. Did anyone wish to pull anything?
I would. A1.
Okay. And I'd like to pull A8, just for discussion.
A6.
A6.
3, 4, 5. So I would move A2 and A7.
Did I hear a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? None. All right. A3, Betty.
A1.
You want to go with
A1? Oh, I'm sorry. A1. I was looking at the wrong page. A1, Melody.
On A1, I just examined the minutes, and I think all of you are in possession of my requested amendment to it, and it's just simply to provide some accuracy to the dollar amounts and the things that I actually did say. These are only about my own comments, and I also counted the words for you, deleted some things. It adds 32 words to just provide some accuracy, and I would request that you approve this.
Okay.
Second.
All right. Discussion? I have to say I did watch the tape, and both Bridget's comments and your comments are accurate. So I don't have a problem with what you've said. I mean, it was correct, but so was Bridget. So I think we just have to be careful not to get into editing our minutes too much. So I don't have any problem with approving this, but I think we need to be careful.
I watched the tape again and actually have it here with me, but... this might be more accurate.
Yeah, okay, right. And I understand that, and I did it last time, too, but I think we have to be careful not to get into a habit of editing our minutes too much.
With some due respect to Bridget, because I do have great respect for her, when I watched the audio video of this thing, I thought, wow, how would I condense that down into, like, 70 or 80 words? So, you know, with due respect, I just went through it and just kind of...
Okay. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay. Say one. And then Betty, A3.
A3, I had a couple of questions for Ms. Luker. Was this item one of a larger list of things that we're doing to upgrade Lila Kaiser? And how does that fit in with upgrading Del Mar?
In terms of, is it on a longer list of upgrades? No. At this point, especially with the budget situation, we're really just doing things as they become absolutely necessary.
Okay.
So the answer to that is no. And in terms of Del Mar, really the most pressing need at Del Mar are big ticket items like new playgrounds and new restrooms.
Mm-hmm.
So while if we held the park in lieu monies for quite some time, we might at some point get enough to do that type of project. It's going to be a long time.
And it's my understanding that we have approximately $22,000 in this fund right now. Is that about how much we make per year? Do you know?
It really depends on what kind of subdivisions come through.
Mm-hmm.
We just recently spent, as you will recall, this city council approved up to $70,000 of these funds being used for the skate park renovation. So mm-hmm. we had about $75,000. So it's because we hadn't spent some in quite mm-hmm. some time. It really depends. Some years we have gotten nothing, and some years we've done fairly well. So it really depends on what's happening within the city and subdivisions in general.
And my last question is, did you consider solar with these? Or clarifications about what this really means is that we're allowing one lease site to have full access to another lease site, the boatyard to the Otter Rock through the slips. And I did want to clarify that we were not eliminating the need for the 25% marine-related. Mm-hmm. So I think my final comment is, I know that we wanted to encourage the visitor center to develop a marine theme, but I don't think we can require that through this lease site. But is that progressing in some way, Mr. Hendricks?
Well, I was unaware that you were going to require that, but we can certainly communicate that to the visitor center.
I thought we had talked about that in our...
We had talked about encouraging it,
right,
rather than requiring it. Right. We were going to encourage the chamber to adopt a more nautical kind of theme or fishing village right. theme.
Okay.
All right. Then I would move A4.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Okay, A5, Betty.
This one is about the... am I in the wrong place?
Transfer of the lease.
Oh, I am so in the wrong place. Sorry. I move A5.
I have a quick question about A5.
Okay.
Since it was pulled, if I may. Maybe you could help me. It says here, and this was in 2001 when I wasn't on council or anything, so don't know, but to construct two mixed... There's authorized execution of 40-year lease. To construct two mixed-use buildings on the land side of 845 Embarcadero. I was wondering what constitutes mixed use down at the Embarcadero. This isn't residential, so what does it mean, mixed use, down there?
Maybe I'd try that one, because that was my phraseology, and it's probably from commercial leasing background. They typically call it a commercial development mixed use if it has a mixed retail and some other
like
types.
A mix of uses.
Yes.
Like
yeah. Okay. Yeah. Gotcha. It has nothing to do with the terminology, I think, that you get out of housing and residential things.
Okay. Thank you. I'm fine with it then. I move that we... Did that get moved?
I thought so. Okay. All right. Do we have a second? And we did it. Okay. Second. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? None. Okay, A6, Melody.
I think some of my concerns about A6 have been resolved, but I just wanted to kind of bring them out. What we're trying to do here is to reclassify a position to probably more accurately reflect what the person of that position does. As a result of that reclassification, there's a 27% increase in the salary, and actually when I looked at the salary on a yearly basis, even the new salary at 27% is pretty reasonable for what this person does. But it is a 27% increase. And then I was assured that that's all going to be funded through the CDBG money. True. This is Bruce, because this person works with you. I was wondering, the money from CDBG pays for the salary. I see that it says through administrative and activity delivery. So this money in CDBG is slated towards salary, right?
Yes.
Okay. Then I was also concerned that this money would also be picking up the benefits for this person because that difference of about... The difference at the lower end of the new scale is about $9,600, the difference. And we usually figure that benefits are about 50% of the rate of pay, more or less. So I'm wondering, at $4,000, would the CDBG money also take up the benefits section?
Right. And Bob may care to jump in with that.
The grant will pay for a portion of the position based on total costs, which would be salary, benefits, and probably some other ancillary costs associated with the operation of the position.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so then there will not be any impact of the general fund on this. Then the other one, I was wondering about the process, but I think the city attorney has assured me that we're following an appropriate process in hiring, even though the position explanation back here says that the first thing we're supposed to do is advertise. Selection guidelines on page 3 says formal application, oral interview, reference check, but since this is a reclassification, we don't have to do all that, Rob?
Correct. Okay. That is correct.
Okay.
I love the intention of having a housing programs coordinator. However, I do want to note that all the CDBG money is going to one fire station, so I suppose this is for all the home grants, but I think they're very important to be secured for the town. So I think the only concerns I had were around impact and around the process, but I think I've been assured that the process is okay. I also had one other little concern about this 40 to 70%, where you say 40 to 70% of the job.
So that we can do those clearances and not subject our residents to flooding situations. So that's what we're doing. I'm also sending a copy of this to one of our residents who's concerned over at one of the mobile home parks so that they will have a boilerplate to work with and they can also communicate. The one thing that I would like to add to this is to make sure that it's copied to all of our representatives, local, state, federal, so that they know we're trying to do this, and we've been timely, and Fish and Game has not.
With that, is this a Fish and Game or Fish and Wildlife?
Fish and Game.
California's Fish and Game.
Then do, yeah. do we really need to send it to CAPS?
I don't think there's anything wrong with having her know.
Okay.
Because if there's some sort of a disaster that becomes of federal proportions, you know, we tried. Yeah. Okay. With that, I move approval of A8.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay. No public hearings. Unfinished business. Consideration of public... Oh, we did that. C1. C2. Discussion on council review of city employment vacancies. This one we started last time and didn't finish because of time constraints. So, Mr. Hendricks?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Mayor. This report was continued from your last meeting, and at that time you authorized filling the vacant dispatch position. The two remaining considerations are authority to fill the halftime parks maintenance worker 2 position and authority to fill the finance director position when it becomes vacant. And so those are the considerations that remain as described in the staff report. And be happy to answer any questions you might have.
The maintenance worker position, is that something that we typically, how long does it take to advertise and everything for that position?
I'm gonna punt that question to Andrea, okay, so that she can give you some background on it.
I just want to know the lead time. What do we need here?
The position was vacated on December 1st, and
oh, okay,
we'll try to advertise quickly, and we're hoping to get somebody in a month or so.
Okay, so it's already empty. Okay.
You're correct, yes.
And then as far as the finance director, my question is, do we have someone who can serve as an interim director while we're doing the interviewing if we don't do this ahead of the time he's leaving?
We do not, unless the city manager acts as the finance director.
And do you feel comfortable doing that? Rob's shaking his head.
Maybe for 30 days.
Because that's my concern, and I realize that this is talking about double salary here, but how do we handle a couple of months of no finance director?
Well, obviously, I think what would be ideal for us would be to have a little bit of overlap so there could be some orientation for the new person coming in, but at least it would be helpful to begin the recruitment before Jim left so that the interval of time that we were without anyone would be minimized.
Okay.
And that's the reason, really, that this is before you.
Okay.
And the thing about the finance director, too, I think that they do need to have some overlap. It's not just the numbers in that position. It's also the atmosphere, the history, mm-hmm, the whole thing. But one of the things that concerns me about this position particularly is that I would love to have the council involved in it somehow, or a representative from council involved in the interview or the review of the application, so that we have a kind of a sense of who this person is. This is a great unknown, and we've seen the weight they carry in our decisions. So I've thought about having like about a month overlap, although there goes that money thing again. Mm-hmm. Ding dong, you know. But because I can't imagine that Jim goes out one day and in comes this next person, you know, and it's just like sits down at the same desk and we get the same.
Mm-mm.
It's not going to happen
that
way.
It won't happen.
Uh-uh. So, but one thing that does concern me is that council have some say or some input during the process, you know, of looking at the applications and talking with people, because we also have a sense of history and the political feel and the sense of concern and that kind of thing.
Madam Mayor?
Mm-hmm.
With the selection of one of the department heads, as a matter of fact, the police chief, yeah. We were introduced and had lunch with the five candidates and were able to provide our feelings to the city manager. And I think if that's something that the city manager is willing to put up with as far as a finance director, would give us an opportunity to meet and just give our impressions to the city manager before the selection's made, if that's something we could do.
Lunch? Sure.
Okay, other comments?
Yeah, to follow up on what Melody.
Betty?
I agree with the overlap. I agree with being involved either on the interview committee or in some form. With both of those.
Okay. All right, so we've got approval for recruitment on our finance director and our parks maintenance worker. And then we just have dispatcher number two. What is that an already vacant funded position?
That was the position that you took action on last time. There was already a vacancy for which we were recruiting, and we were asking for permission to look at filling the second position, which had become vacant.
Okay, so we
so
did that
we're right. covered on that one, and okay. It's just the remaining two positions that we're talking about now.
Okay. So, may I have a motion authorizing?
I move that we authorize staff to go ahead and fill the recruit and to begin to fill the position of finance director and to recruit and fill the position of parks maintenance worker, too.
Can I hear a second?
I'll second if you'll add the caveat that we would like a one-month transition period, if possible.
I'll include
with
that.
The finance director.
I'll include that in the motion.
Okay. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? None. All right. C3, City Council meeting schedule for 2006. How exciting. Okay.
Madam Mayor, this the purpose of this report, which was also carried over from your last meeting, was to set a firm schedule of regular meetings and any identified special meetings for the next calendar year. It's suggested that you consider cancellation of one meeting in June or July, depending on what your calendars indicate, and the second meeting in November and December. Also, you may want to consider scheduling any fifth Monday meetings that you might desire. The 30th of January, of course, is already scheduled as a joint meeting with the Planning Commission. And once you've got all that set, I would recommend that you adopt that as your schedule.
I'm sorry, Bob. But
I believe it's January 30th is the fifth Monday.
But I think you misspoke and said that we were scheduled for Planning Commission and it's a town hall meeting.
Oh, yes, you're right. Yeah. I stand corrected.
Yeah,
thank
it's
you.
Late.
Okay, and the purpose of eliminating one of those summer meetings is what? Just vacations and that kind of thing? Or?
Yeah, there was an interest on the part of individuals on the council during the summer to take one of the meetings, although collectively you weren't able to aggregate on a single meeting. My hope was that if you talked about that a half year or so in advance, that you might be able to agree on the meeting, and then all of you would have some time you could count on during that time of the year.
I would just jump in here and say that I was probably one of the people who was talking about this based on what happened to me last summer, and that is planning any long trips with the summer off from Cal Poly and looking at that. And when I was talking about it with Bob and some other people on staff, I found out that staff, too, desire some time off, and they like to plan ahead and then put that trip in that, I mean, this expanse of time we've had in November and December has been generous.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Saying all that, I don't think we can do June at all because that's budget. We have to be very careful about the first July meeting because that could be budget too, unfortunately. So if we were to do any of those meetings in June or July, it would have to be the latter of July, and that's what I've actually been basing some of my own personal vacation planning on. When I looked at this memo, I thought of those. I know I'm not going anywhere in June this year. I did last year and it was a mess. But and also I worry about the July 10th being so close to the budget thing. But, you know, I think that summer is a time when people take vacations, when people have their children are out of school and they go places. And I think that's why we talked, and I might have started the talk about one of those meetings being canceled.
Let's shoot for July 24th then.
Well,
gets us out of budget.
It's kind of ironic that we're talking about canceling July 24th and adding a fifth Monday on July 31st.
That
well,
is.
There you go.
I would be opposed to canceling any meetings other than our one meeting in December. So I'll throw that into counterbalance what Mr. Meredith said.
Let me get my 2 cents worth in.
Okay.
The last budget session being my only budget session so far, that's the experience I'm using. We had several, 3, 4 additional meetings prior to, and we're going to have more, particularly with a new budget director coming aboard, mid-budget, if you will. I think that we can easily, well, let me rephrase that. I think that this council can adopt a budget by the last meeting in June. We need, I believe, the first July meeting just to catch up on things and to make sure we have, in fact, got a budget in place.
Right after Thanksgiving. It's
27th.
Yeah, it says 26th, but it's actually the 27th.
Right.
Okay, let's correct that.
Yeah, let's be careful of the dates. Some of them are
okay.
A week off or something.
Well, if we, what do we want our fifth Monday meetings for? I guess that would be the first question to decide. What do we need to do? As far as our Joint Planning Commission meeting, I'm thinking we can have that at one of their regulars scheduled times from 5 to 6.
We show up.
Right,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So we don't have to do a fifth Monday for that. We could do a town hall meeting at the end of January. Do we want to do another one? Remembering, too, that by, well, not till August, you get into campaign season as well.
Taking up Planning Commission meeting time with us, are you asking them to come early?
Yeah, come at 5.
Because I know we've got a whole list of agenda items they're supposed to be working on, and I would hesitate to use up their time.
No, we wouldn't take it away from the regular meeting. Just ask them to come an hour earlier, which I think we did last time when we met with them, and that worked out.
We did that with promotions. But then, and particularly with planning issues, then we feel like we have to be done within an hour. I mean, that just really limits the discussion in terms of where that may or may not go. My opinion.
Well, we'll see how it goes.
Well, they're meeting twice a month now again, right?
Yeah.
And so I don't know that we would have to limit ourselves to an hour. Couldn't we just crawl right onto the agenda or right into their 6 o'clock time and just proceed?
Well, it's the caseload varies depending upon, what projects are coming, new ones are coming there and new old ones. It's difficult to predict how it's going to go.
How's their January schedule look? The second meeting?
I'm not sure. I'd have to get back to you.
Okay.
It's been lighter just because of where the caseload is right now.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean there's not other activity. It just means that things are ripening at different times in the review and approval process.
Because I was thinking of meeting. But they may not be meeting in January because of the New Year's holiday on the 2nd, and then the Martin Luther King on the 16th, and then the town hall
meeting on the Tuesday,
30th.
The 17th, probably.
On Tuesday, okay.
I believe so, right?
That's what would happen when Monday's on a holiday.
And that's what I was looking at for a joint meeting.
Yeah. Well, I have to say my teaching schedule's changed again, of course, and I work on Tuesdays and Thursdays until 6, and so if we were trying a 5 o'clock meeting on Tuesday or Thursday,
that's
I would
hard.
Miss it.
So Monday night would be better for you. So maybe their first meeting in February.
Or Wednesdays. But
well, we're going for one of their regular meetings. That's the only time they have it on Tuesday because of the holiday.
Right.
So if we went for the first Monday in February.
That'd be the 6th.
Shall we go for that for our Joint Planning Commission meeting?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. February 6th.
What time?
Why don't we wait a while and see what the schedule looks like? If it looks like they have a light agenda, maybe we could just go in at 6, and if they've got a lot to do, we'll ask them to come in at 5. Does that sound reasonable? Everybody? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we'll leave that open. All right, then.
I think that when I look at the recommendations here, Janice, I think that what we need to do is about this July 31st, October 30th, and I'm kind of with Bill on July 31st, but the October 30th, I think, is a real key day because it will be the Monday before, the Monday the week before the election.
Right.
And I think that we should really plan to use that day for a big town hall meeting, discussion, hoopla about get this initiative passed or some activity.
I don't think we can.
No, we can't. Can we? That's right.
Uh-uh. Well, no, we can't.
Well, then we could meet with somebody else.
Yeah, so I think that's probably a day we avoid. Is there anything else that we want to accomplish on a fifth Monday? Has anybody got a topic? That,
well,
I mean,
well,
we could go for a second.
By then, we don't now.
We could go for a second town hall meeting on July 31st. How about that? Let's aim for that.
Okay.
And then if something else comes up that's a specific topic, we can make that.
I have a clarification. Oh. Mr. Schultz, are we meeting twice or once a year with Planning Commission legally?
Yeah.
Do you remember? Did we end up changing that or leaving it alone?
God, I can't remember. I know we discussed it. I thought we...
Did we leave it as two?
I thought we changed it to annual. But
to
I,
once?
Yeah. But
okay.
I.
We probably need to check.
Yeah.
Okay. We can always meet with another commission or board.
And we can always meet again with planning by October 30th because, as Bill says, we don't know what's going to be going on by then. I think we're getting consensus about July 24th, but I don't know about November. I think November 26th as well, except for...
I can go either way.
Yeah.
If there's stuff that we need to do, I don't mind doing it. But at the same time, it's nice to have that time during the holidays.
I'm willing to reduce it by those numbers as long as we're going to plug in these maybes on the 30th of October and the last month.
Yeah, we're reducing two, but we're adding on two fifth Mondays. Yes.
Exactly. Right. We're coming out all right. We're going to have whatever we have for the budget as extra meetings.
Right. Okay, so the 27th we're going to cancel, and July 24th. I mean, it's November 27th and July 24th, correct?
Yes.
Right.
Okay.
So I think that's...
And then the other one was February 13th. I don't know why that one was in there.
We're having it on the 14th.
Yeah.
Yeah, just confirming that that falls on a holiday, so just confirming that we'd hold it the day after on the 14th, Tuesday.
Right. Oh, okay. Do we have it on Valentine's Day?
We did last year.
Okay.
What the heck?
All right, so November
27th.
Okay. Does that get all the ones you had questions on, I think?
I would request that we get a memo about this. Is that okay?
That would probably be a good idea.
If you would like to act by motion to set that schedule, then we'll
without having to go through it ourselves
again.
Back to
you and to everybody else in the organization so everybody knows what the schedule is going to be.
I move that we then approve the schedule that would cancel the July 24th, November 27th meetings, reserving July 31st and October 30th as fifth Monday meetings, and holding the Monday, February 13th meeting instead on Tuesday, February 14th.
Second.
And I think there was one other one scheduling.
The Planning Commission.
The
Joint Planning Commission meeting on February
6th.
And scheduling the Joint Planning Commission on February 6th.
Second.
Second.
Okay.
Thad wants to second it.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Got that done. All right. C4, consideration of proposed bylaws for the Community Promotions Committee. This was on our consent agenda last time, and we wanted to have a little time to discuss it. So You have anything you want to say, Bob?
Well, just basically the committee prepared these after your joint meeting with them with the idea of proposing them back to you. Or they were on your agenda last time, and there was an indication that you wanted to review them or had suggested amendments, and so here they are.
Okay. I had comments. Anybody else? All right, I'll start.
The only thing I had was just a little edit thing. This is on the Promotions Committee bylaws, and that's the double will thing going on in the third paragraph.
Each in red member. Or black?
Oh, red.
Okay.
Second line in red, annually each committee member will be required, and that's just insert and delete kind of things. Just get rid of that. That was the only thing I had.
And what did you want to...
Just deleting one of the wills. It's just a simple.
Okay.
No, it's nothing worth even looking at.
Okay, because that's the one that I wanted to discuss too. Initially, my suggestion was that they actually work at the visitor center for a little while, once a year, and they've eliminated that. And I kind of feel that that's not too much to ask. To ask them to serve a 4-hour shift one Saturday at the visitor center, and I specify a Saturday because that way it'll be a somewhat busy day, hopefully. I think that's a good idea, and I don't think it's asking them to do too much, so I wanted to put that back in.
I don't think we need to specify Saturday necessarily. I think in the summertime it could be any day of the week down there. I feel for them as busy people who themselves are in the tourism industry, many of them, and Saturday could be their busy day is the only thing I'm thinking, like, why not a Sunday, why not a Friday?
Okay, well, how about a weekend or any day during the summer season? I mean, I don't care about that. I just feel that 4 hours once a year is not too much to ask them to have that viewpoint in their work.
I support that fully after being down there for a few hours. I learned a lot about our visitors.
Yeah. Okay, how do other people feel?
Yeah, it works for me.
And where does that go back in at?
I have suggested language for you. And
a matter of promoting existing businesses as well as trying to draw tourists in. You know, like doing cooperative advertising, like, okay, all the motels this week are giving you free gas or something like that.
Yeah, many times when the promotion committee books ads in... various media, they do so on a shared basis, often with their local hotels or other local businesses in order to bring the cost down.
Okay.
So maybe three or four entities will share a single ad in a like the Sunset or something.
Okay.
Anything else?
And does the word infrastructure need to be clarified in the second red paragraph? Or the second underlined paragraph on that front page, through the establishment of additional events as well as possible improvement to the tourism and business infrastructure. I'm not sure I know what that means either.
Tell you the truth, I'm not either. What's a business infrastructure?
Well, it could be a variety of things. Let me give you an example. One example might be some sort of common reservation or room sharing system where somebody comes to town and they're looking for a room that the rooms are sort of logged as available citywide so that you could access the entire city as opposed to individual business by business, that kind of thing.
Okay.
Various kinds of information sharing, that sort of thing.
My last comment would be on the last page, just a technical or grammatical, that there's a line skipped. There's first three lines, and then the sentence continues to Robert's Rules, just to eliminate that line. Blank line.
Okay. So may I have a motion approving those as
amended. So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay. That one's been hanging around a lot. I have so many copies of that. Okay, C5, grant-funded directional signage installation program. We finally got to this,
yes.
Bruce.
Yes.
You didn't have to wait another night in vain.
No, that's fine.
We're more open.
You're on.
You may remember this program was, the sign program was approved by the council several months ago, with the exception of the sign locations. And at that time, the council selected a sign design and authorized staff to solicit proposals for two directional and two entryway signs. What we're coming back to you with were several sign product materials, and asking you if you are still in to provide direction on the sign locations and authorize the expenditure of the community development grant funds for these installations. You may remember that when we originally came to you with the estimates of the sign program expenses, we estimated about $40,000. We can still get all of these signs done for that amount out of these grant funds, depending upon what material the council chooses. There's generally five sign material types. I'm going to give them to you so you can pass them around. There's MDO plywood, which is the wood sign that most folks see that's painted and treated. Then there's plexiglass or aluminum, which are the same kinds of signs you see that we have for street regulatory signage. Then we have sandblasted wood, and the best example of that is behind you. The seal is made out of sandblasted wood. Now, that the signage that we have quite a few of those that are in the community, they don't look as nice as that because they've been weathered, but that's also a sign type that is available for our use. We can use shaped foam. I've got a sample of that. And then we also have a high-pressure laminate. So let me give you these, and you can take a look at them.
What's the most durable?
The most durable is the high-pressure laminate in your folder. It's called a fossil. That material comes with a 20-year lifetime guarantee. There are a number of advantages with all of these products based on the appearance, durability, maintenance, and cost. We've tried to kind of look at all of those and lay them out. It seems like, for example, for the gateway signage, the high-pressure laminate or that fossil material that's being passed around may be a good material because that's real durable and the color holds for quite some time, versus some of the directional signs that can be, in terms of materials, that shaped foam or the sandblasted wood would be a good material trade name.
Or not quite the lowest price, but just very low.
The bottom line is we can do any of these products within the budget that you originally talked about.
Okay, what about maintenance, like people spray painting on them or taking a BB gun to them or whatever?
Any of them can be damaged. We really haven't had a problem with vandalism in the community on any of the signs, and I have to tell you though we haven't had a very effective maintenance program of the signage either.
Okay.
So they may not look as good, but we really haven't been maintaining them to the standards that we would, and that's one of the things that we would do here. Is in a 5-year program, we'd send the crew out to take a look at everything, clean it up.
Okay.
There are for the directionals, for the laminate product, it comes with a pretty good listing of maintenance things that we can do to get the graffiti off and treat it to hold the color. And any of these signs can be vandalized, but we haven't had a problem with them in the past. It really matters on what your preference is on the materials.
Does cost come into this, or do we have enough to do it either way?
I've laid out the cost. Well, obviously, the more inexpensive products are the, the plexiglass or aluminum signs, or, but that doesn't have the richness of appeal, and it may not successfully.
Well, you had said you thought we could do it we could complete the project with the funds that are available.
You can complete it with any of the samples that you have.
They're all within our...
They're real good products. I mean, we spent... I don't know anything about signage, unfortunately. I had to learn quickly. But there's these are probably the best materials for our uses. And it's really a choice of yours, whatever you think is best.
It's just exciting to not have to look at price and make our decision that way.
Well, remember, what we would do is... change out the existing signs at Yerba Buena and Morro Bay Boulevard, and then we would also apply for approval from Caltrans to install the new gateway signs on Highway 1 and 41.
Okay.
If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
I have one.
Okay. Bill?
Do you have a specific recommendation for the various signs, in other words, like fossil for the gateways and the shaped foam or something for the city street? We have seen that, I know, but what are they again?
We're recommending the fossil for the gateway ones that you'd see at the freeway, and either the shaped foam or the shaped foam or the sandblasted wood would be good for the in-town directional signs that motorists at slower speeds and pedestrians see.
The Byways Committee, are they working in conjunction with you or parallel talking to Caltrans about getting money for the gateway signs?
We've already got an application in for that, and I think we may be able to get that, and if we do it some later time, that'd be good. We're not for the new signs.
My question is, are we running a parallel track with the Byways, Slocog Byways Committee, or are we piggybacking on them?
I think we're running on a parallel track. We've had the request for the signage in for several months, maybe even up to a year. And we've also asked for signage through the last go-around through COG funding, and that may happen. And you may remember that we've got a partnership with the estuary program and state parks.
Because I'm thinking the Byways Committee is asking for the same thing you're asking for, and that may be at the same locations even. So I just wanted to clarify that.
My recollection is they may be looking for bicycle signage, and we're okay.
It's both. So I'll just get that clarified later. I really like the sign at the entrance to the Quintana and Morro Bay Boulevard that's in stone and wood. I hate to see that changed out. I'm just going to say that to the rest of the commission committee. It's just I find it really attractive. It's very earthy. It's who we say we are, and I think this is yellow and blue, which will be really artificial looking.
We have some of those out there now. We've got some examples of that product. It probably is going to require a little bit more maintenance than the shaped foam, but for the same token, you can see what they look like. They've been out there, we think, for about 10 years, 8 or 10 years.
Well, that would be the last one that we would have to replace, given that if we do that roundabout and that intersection, that would probably change anyway if we wanted to not do that sign.
What we're hoping is we would change it so they'd all have the same look and logo, so that to kind of pull the program together and be recognizable community-wide with the same theme.
I have to admit, I like that sign too.
I would like the fossil for all the signs, just for the reasons it's listed on the chart. It's the highest on appearance, it's high on durability, it's high on maintenance, and it's a moderately priced item. So I'd like to see that material for all the signs.
All right, I have a question, because there's another sign that I love, and that's the one that's the entrance to Cayucas. And that's sandblasted wood, right?
Sure.
Because that's a lot. It looks like this.
The one on the upper hill?
As you go into
like
Cayucas.
Trees or something?
Yeah, it's got a blue, gray heron, I think, and a blue heron and trees, and it's beautiful. But it's like this. It's got the relief carving and stuff. Would that be good for a gateway?
See, I like those two signs a lot. I like that earth. I like the wood, the stone, because that's who we are, the trees and the rock. And I would see these more for directional signs once you're in town rather than for the gateway signs. I know we've already talked about this and said we would replace the gateway signs.
Well, but if we replace them with something in the sandblasted wood that would be pretty like that instead of the flat fossil.
Just for the gateway ones?
Be a nice target.
I love that Cayucas one. I think it's beautiful.
Well, I don't know what maintenance has been done on it, and I'm trying to recall the color of it and all that, but for example, if we had something like this out of doors, just the weathering of the wood in this kind of climate and any kind of hope of keeping any paint on that. I mean, I do love that sign. Yeah. I'm not aware of what kind of maintenance they're doing to it. If we have to send people out to paint the little sails on again every year.
Well, it'd be interesting to find out, because it is. I mean, if others agree with me, I just think it's a beautiful sign for the gateway ones. You know, for the inside, in town, yeah, the fossil's great.
When you're saying gateway, you mean the highway signs?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's 65 miles an hour. Somebody's going to notice.
I notice that Cayucas one every time, don't you? Don't you think it's pretty?
I've seen it a couple of times. I usually look at all the events listed underneath it, and I'm not looking at the quality of the sign. You know, you have to consider that people are going to be going. It's like the discussion the promotions committee had a number of years ago, what to put on the billboard out there and how much could people read and what can you see. And at 65 miles an hour, you don't see any of it. I mean, really, it's boom, there's a sign that says Morro Bay and you're out of here. And I think I'd rather have something that's big, durable, and gets their, you know, catches their eye. Then when you get off the freeway, like where the gas station is, where that sign is, that's where you want your relief and all of that, I would think, because people are going slower. They can see it. They can appreciate it. That would
be
my
so
feeling.
You're saying the one in the park there with next to our rock fountain? Did that one be the sandblasted or whatever?
Well, I think once they get off the freeway and you're seeing, you know, you're now in type of thing or welcome to,
that's
where you have a nice relief. And, I mean, you want them just to be able to see the sign going by.
Yeah.
That's my feeling.
I do have a comment about the new directional signs and their locations. My sense is that they're all pointing to the waterfront, that they're not necessarily pointing to downtown, and they're all within a block or two of each other. And I'm wondering if these new signs can't be spread out more into other locations, like up at Harbor and Bernardo Street.
Wasn't that location a whole project that someone did, though, as far as where the good locations were for directions?
Well, we got some feedback on that. And some of the from my recollection, there were quite a few signs that they were calling for. One of the other things that we're trying to accomplish with this is eliminating existing signage, cluttering, confusing signage, and trying to consolidate it, not set any new poles, to just try to simplify it, not put more out there.
Mm-hmm.
We could oversign the place.
Sorry, Bruce, but just to support what he's saying, I don't know if you still have this addendum, but some gals in town walked around town, drove around, and put a list of all the signs together, so these poles are already in the ground. I kind of thought that those signs were awfully close too, like five blocks with about eight signs. But if the poles are already there and we take down a pre-existing and put up one of these, and I don't know if all those poles are already there or not.
Well, what we would do is take signage down, and then where poles existed, we would maybe take the signage down to keep the pole and put the new sign up. Like, some of them are obsolete, like references to the Chamber of Commerce.
Right.
Yeah, some of them just need to be freshened up.
Mm-hmm. So this point number three.
Any locations that you feel are most effective, our approach in looking at this is just trying to see where the volume of folks are going that aren't familiar with the community, and that's what we think. Areas, points of public interest.
So my subsequent concern is that all these signs are pointing to the Embarcadero. Nothing's pointing to downtown and the services that are there, whether it's civic or business.
But I understand. If you've got some ideas, we'd love to hear them.
Okay. There was one.
Well, people pretty much go through downtown. It's the Embarcadero that they don't know how to find.
Well, I'm not saying to not do the Embarcadero, but in it, like if you come in on Morro Bay Boulevard, you're going to want to know. I like knowing where the library is. I like knowing that I'm going to the business section. If I'm coming in from State Parks on Main Street, I need to know that I'm, you know, that it, when you get to Piney and Main where they split, that you need to go to
the left
get to downtown or the Embarcadero, that you don't really want to go to Piney unless you're going to the library or grocery store. I mean, that kind of stuff. I mean, there's a couple of key places that identify other things.
Okay.
Yeah. I think, too, just to support that, when you come in on Morro Bay Boulevard, I'd support the library because every traveler wants the internet connection that you might get at a library in this town. They often want to know where the police department is.
Post office.
Post office is another place to drop off cards. So as they come in there, and I've sat there occasionally on Morro Bay Boulevard to just watch people on weekends drive straight down the street to the Embarcadero, and it would be lovely to just interrupt them for a second and have them turn to the library or the post office and get a look at some of our downtown businesses. And so that's one of the things. In terms of this eclectic thing and this idea that they would all look alike, I kind of do support retaining some of the eclectic feel. I don't want to start looking like Disneyland, where everything is all the same kind of blue and yellow kind of thing. And so retaining some of our old-fashioned kind of signs, I think, is good. And then one other little thing about the program principles, I don't think that we need to identify churches and schools. National Estuary, I think, has their own look, their own logo. You know, I don't think some of it is it's their money or it's their logo or it's their signage. We might want to do Bird Sanctuary because I think we're the ones who put that sign up.
We just did those. Those are brand new signs.
But other than that, I would support that idea about Morro Bay Boulevard, just kind of slowing them down and sending them to a couple of offshoots there, but that's about.
Okay, so if we were going to keep the Morro Bay Boulevard sign and have all the others add a few more to the list, we'd still be okay budget-wise, right, if we were to...
It really matters on how many more you want to add to the list and where they are and what kind of sign they are. I'm not quite sure. I've only estimated, 2, 4, 6, 8 new directional signs. Those are the 3x5 signs. Now, if you want to move those around, I could keep the same price if you want to move them to different locations. If you're going to add new signs, then we're probably looking at increasing costs. I mean, I'm trying to say if we can stay in with an 8 and you move them around, we're fine.
Yeah, okay.
When you say 3x5, that's 3 feet by 5 feet.
Right.
And how many items can you put on one board?
Now, it's also a function of the speed at which the traveler is traveling. Most of these are design speeds about 25 miles an hour pedestrian speed. In our program, I can't remember. It's related. There's a letter height that was identified based on the speed we're traveling, and it's a function of that. It can't be real cluttered. Even at 35, that's a lot of reading to do.
Yeah,
and we want people to have their eyes on the road. If anything, maybe looking at our merchants, not our signage, just looking at the great sales that we have going on in town.
All right, let's first of all decide, do we want to replace the one that's at the beginning of Morro Bay Boulevard? How do people feel about that?
You've got a problem with maintenance, I think. We're in the process now of trying to say we're going to put some signs up that we hope will be long-lasting. If you don't change out those entryway signs now, when are you going to do it? When you have to? Are you going to have the money then? We've got the money now. My idea is that we should use this high-density urethane foam for the gateway replacement signs, and I say that because the longer you live in Morro Bay, the less you like sandblasted wood for anything. And how long do we want these to last, and how much work do we want maintenance to have to do on them after we put them in the ground?
So
that's the question. I'm saying.
All right. How's everybody else feel about that?
Okay.
Bill? You okay? Melody?
Well, I agree with you about sandblasted wood, although I do like that Morro Bay sign, that Welcome to Morro Bay sign up there by now the rock sculpture.
Maybe we could put it somewhere else.
Yeah.
In town.
You mean that sign, Welcome to Morro Bay, somewhere
else? Yeah.
No.
Why not?
It's character. It's when you come to Morro Bay, you see the stacks, you see the rock, you see the sign.
Maybe we could auction them off.
It's sentimental.
Now you want to get rid of the stacks and the sign, right?
Then we can get rid of the rock. Okay. Regardless of that sign, are we saying that at least at Urba Buena that we're going to put in this one sign?
The fossil.
The fossil. And then are we saying we'll have eight little guys that will be downtown somewhere?
Well, no, wait. I think Thad was saying use the carved foam on both of those mm-hmm. gateways mm-hmm. where people are slowing down to enter the city. Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So Highway 1 at Urba Buena and maybe the one on Morro Bay Boulevard, which we haven't quite decided yet. But that one we want the foam, right? On Highway 1. Okay. We got that. Not the one at...
And then the new directionals will be the fossil? The little directional signs?
Yes. The one Melody has.
Right. All fossil on the directional.
And there'll be eight of them at some location.
Right. Okay, we all agree on that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think they're great. The half-inch thickness, too.
And then okay. What else do we need to do? Is that it?
And then the ones that are going to go out on the highway, we want the fossil as well.
The new highway ones right. that we need Caltrans approval on. Right. I think you okay. mentioned fossil.
All right, so then the only thing we have to decide is what to do with the main entrance one at the city. How many want to keep it, and how many want to replace it?
I haven't seen it enough to look at it. I mean, I'm driving past it a lot, but I wasn't looking at it to see if we were going to keep it.
Trust us. It's gorgeous.
What kind of maintenance is required on that sign? How often do we have to do anything to it?
You know, we haven't done anything with them, and that's part of the reason why they may not look as well. You know, they're in a marine environment. They've been weathering the wind yeah. and the sun and the rain and the salt water.
And that's why it's so characteristic of the town.
All right.
I think we really ought to try to think of another place for it other than right there. I mean, it's been a while since I looked at the sign. I hardly ever come into Morro Bay that way.
City but, Park sign is the same thing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it the same style?
No, it's weird. Yeah, we could put it down on the Main Street off ramp where I get off to go home. You're whipping around the corner. Welcome to Morro Bay. No, that place with the roundabout and everything, everyone's going to get slowed down, you know, and nicely look at the rock sculpture, the Welcome to Morro Bay.
Well, we could take it and put it in a park.
All right. How many want to retain the old sign at the entrance to Morro Bay Boulevard?
Me.
Okay. All right. So we want to keep that one, and all the others we'll go ahead and replace, but that gives us a little more money to maybe...
Yes, it does. Yes.
...go somewhere else with another one. All right. Now, do you want to have Bruce come back with locations, or do we want to submit those location ideas to him and have him bring them back to
we'll
us for approval?
That would be great. Thank you.
Okay. So anybody has another idea for a location for a sign, let Bruce know.
And then, right, and then we'll come back to you on consent or something just so that everybody understood
great.
What...
Okay. That's that.
Do you need a motion on this?
Do you need a motion?
Yes, that would be helpful.
Okay. Let's hear a motion then.
I move that we approve what we just said. That we have that we do not remove the sign at Morro Bay Boulevard in Quintana, that we do change the sign out at Urba Buena and Highway 1, and that we have eight little directional signs somewhere in the downtown area.
Or more.
Or more with our extra money at the discretion of...
And two highway signs.
And two highway signs as well?
Right.
And two highway signs.
And just for clarification, the foam would be used at Yorba Buena. The fossil would be used for the new gateway signs on the freeway
right.
at Highway 1 and 41. And then foam would be used for the 8 directional signs which are to be determined.
No, I thought we said fossil for the
fossil
8.
Fossil for the oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Fossil. Make it easy.
I had the foam on the Highway 1 Yorba Boy.
Are the numbers on here still accurate in light of Mr. Solu's resignation?
Did you include that, Bridget? Was he already eliminated on?
Yeah, he's crossed out.
Okay.
Five is correct.
Okay. All right, we're also talking about the ad hoc committee, and I just would like a little bit of information on that one. How did 12 get decided to be the number, and are you looking for a variety in your applicants and all of that sort of thing? That's a very large committee, so what was the thinking there? Yeah, I know.
Well, me or Thad, I don't know. Shall I take this, Thad? Okay, I guess so. The thinking on this was that we were hoping to reach a very broad spectrum of stakeholders,
mm-hmm.
and people with a variety of skills. And so we had started at a different number, I think 8 or 9 or something, and then based on lots of discussion that we had at this meeting, we were urged to go up higher. Based on the fact that at several meetings, things like this, not everyone shows up. And we always wanted to have a good I'm sorry to use this word, but robust discussion going on amongst the people. The other reason for going that large was because we want to include county as well as city residents, with a greater emphasis on city residents and a greater number of city residents always than county. But going to county because we've become convinced that this is a destination area and really of critical importance to the entire county, that we ought to be engaging all members of the county as stakeholders in what might happen to this property. So we went to 14 with the two council members plus 12. That is a large commission, but at our very first meeting, I think we had 13 people there who weren't even on, they just showed up. And then the next meeting we had 10. I think the other day we were down to around 5 or 6 people. Some people have been coming repeatedly, and of course they'll probably be applying. And as you probably know too, Toby Crockett's been very helpful, and she lives in Cambria. And a couple of folks have been coming in from San Luis Obispo. I'd like to get people like a Michael Manchak to consider applying. I've been talking with him, and of course, he's in San Luis Obispo with economic vitality. So when we looked at the size and the complexion of it, we knew that we wanted to go big, we wanted to be varied, and we wanted to attempt to draw in as many talents as we could and as many voices as we could to this.
Are you going to specify the like categories that you're looking for? Or
well, not? We threw that around for a while, and we started developing, one day I remember we started developing this long laundry list of talents we were looking for, and then we said, wait a second, because nobody has all those. And I remember at one point we threw out the word architectural because we didn't necessarily want to have architects, and we went for design because we wanted people who just had a broad vision.
Mm-hmm.
So what we put down here is that we wanted a dedicated working committee, intent on balancing the needs of the city, surrounding communities, variety of environmental design and economic concerns, hoping that we'd get people coming into this who had some maybe accounting or budgetary or grant writing economic background, some people with a design, they might be architects, city and regional planners, people like that, and then, of course, the environmental and the most recent discussion, too, including, of course, representatives from Native American peoples and that kind of thing. So we're just looking for the widest array of stakeholders without trying to nail it down too much.
I guess my concern is in looking for that many people, and you said you've got about 5 or 6 regular attendees, is what if all you get is several people who have the same viewpoint as a stakeholder and that's your whole committee? Is that going to be effective?
Well, one of the things that we decided to ask council is that we could advertise this as well, not just in the Bay News and the Sun Bulletin, but that we could also put another advertisement in the Tribune looking for a broader range. So that's one way to avoid just having one point of view. The second part of it was that we decided, Thad and I did, that instead of Thad and I deciding or five volunteers deciding, that we would bring it back to council and put it into the regular commission and board interview process so that we all five have a vote and a say in who winds up on the ad hoc committee. And so thus we bring it back to council that way.
And what about staff? Do you have a secretary lined up? And
Rob has, I'll tell you, Rob has been very generous with his time.
And persons on some of the committees, and I noticed that vacancies are numerous in a couple of occasions, and if we advertise to refill those vacancies, we would retain the same number of committee members, and so I wanted to bring that to light with the council at this point. So if you wanted to...
Yeah, we kind of discussed that and said as long as there's people interested, we still wanted to maintain the number. Yeah. So, okay, so when do we look at for a date?
I'd like to suggest Monday, January 16th. I know there's a planning commission meeting that night, but we don't usually meet.
It's a holiday. That's Martin Luther King Day.
Bummer. It's a legal holiday.
Yep. And the Bird Festival.
Madam Mayor?
That's true.
Yes.
We had tentatively set, actually my calendar, I already have the 19th of January pegged in for that. The staff report suggests Wednesday the 11th or Thursday the 19th. Maybe we ought to take the 11th and do the 12-member committee on that one and then do the rest of our boards and commissions on the 19th.
How's that sound?
I would also throw into that mix that we will probably be having, it's possible we'll have a JPA, and JPA usually meets on a Thursday.
Yeah, that's true.
So do you want to do two Wednesdays for the interviews and leave the Thursdays open for the JPA?
So it'll be Wednesday the 11th and Wednesday the 18th?
Yeah. And while we're talking about that, I think that the 11th is kind of early. And the deadline on here, I think last year we also changed this, that we gave people an extra week because of the holidays to submit applications, and that we really waited until the 20s to actually do the interviews. So I would be willing to maybe the Wednesday the 22nd. Would that work?
Is that helping us then to extend the deadline for applications from January 6th?
Yeah, I would do that too.
It's the same thing we did last year, and I kind of wish that we could get this kind of institutionalized later... expiration date of a term or something, so that this doesn't hit us right after the holidays.
Yeah, it is hard.
So what are we looking at? The
Wednesday the 25th.
Okay, let me see what that one.
Or Wednesday the 18th.
Okay. No, we're going to need 2 days.
That's 2 days.
So are we talking about extending the 6th to at least the 13th?
Yeah.
In terms of applications?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay.
So we could do the 18th and the 25th if you want.
Okay. That okay with everyone?
Mm-hmm. 18th for?
18th and the 25th.
Which one?
Which one you want to do first? Let's go with the...
let's do boards and commissions.
Boards and commissions first.
On the 18th?
Yeah, and then the new one on the 25th. So the boards and commissions can hit the ground running on right in February.
6 o'clock?
Yep. And location to be determined? Okay. Yes, Bridget.
I would like to ask about the advertisement dates that I've chosen. Would you like for me to advertise, since you've extended the deadline, instead of December 21st and 28th? Do you have any ideas on when you'd like to advertise these vacancies?
I would do it that week and the following week. Or... I think 2 weeks is good, because sometimes people might miss one week because of the holidays. And so if it's done 2 weeks in a row, maybe they'll see one of them.
So leave it at the 21st and the 28th?
Or push it out to the 28th and the week after that, maybe. I don't know. That's just my opinion.
That's okay. Yeah, that feels weird. Because after, I mean, during the holidays, it's really hard to catch people. Afterwards, I think they're going to be paying more attention. And then also, what about the idea of advertising in the Tribune for the other one? I think that we'd have to. It's the only way we're going to get that kind of a cross-section.
Mm-hmm.
Do we know how much that's going to cost? Do we have a budget for this?
She probably wants to take it out mine or Thad's contingency budget.
Because she doesn't have one.
I gave it up.
But Thad's on that committee.
I think we had had a... Oh, sorry. I think we'd had an estimate of about $300 on that, and we were just kind of guessing at the meeting. I want to assure council, too, that we discussed at the last ad hoc meeting numerous other approaches to trying to do outreach to chambers of commerce, to bring in the business community, to the NEP for all their stakeholders. I might try to get on Dave Congleton's show and talk about the ad hoc committee and boost the applications so that the one advertisement in the Tribune could be called decent noticing to the county.
Right.
And then the auxiliary things that myself and Thad and the volunteers that we have right now would be willing to do. We already have drafted kind of a press release even that we were waiting for council to approve the committee, and then we would go ahead and release free media kind of alerts.
Okay.
But I don't know what the ad would cost, really. I think they're trying to... Bridget, are you trying?
And D2 was removed. D3, discussion of residential vacation rental and transient occupancy tax regulations. Okay, Rob.
Yes, good evening again. This item is in front of you for a discussion about possibly making a couple of changes to our transient occupancy tax regulations. It was a future agenda item by Mayor Peters about possibly that we are losing some TOT based on vacation rentals. Historically for the city, any vacation rental that is managed by one of the management company or real estate companies in the city does know about our TOT, and we are aggressive on collecting that amount from any management company. So I believe we are collecting that amount properly. The question is are we obtaining, if someone is renting it on their own, are we obtaining that TOT? And it's, you know, kind of hard to tell if we are. I researched a lot of different cities and counties and kind of looked at what the county process is, and some of them I found very over-regulated, but that was due to the fact that they have problems with noise, parking, and other issues that I don't believe is where the mayor was heading with this ordinance. But I did see in some of them an application process that's required to go through to obtain a you can call it a permit. It's more like a license. It would be an extra license that someone would have to obtain if they want to do a vacation rental. My hopes would be if with an outreach, you know, program, information program, something that maybe we can put in the water bills or somehow to get people to realize that if you are renting your place as a vacation rental, you are required to pay TOT if it's less than 30 days and require a little bit more of a license process. No fee, I don't believe, would be charged with it. It's just when they get a business license, which they're supposed to have also, you'd have another form to fill out. It would have also who the responsible person is also for if there is any noise complaints. So that's the first issue. If you do want to make that a separate step process that they'd have to do, whether we're able to collect any more TOT, I don't know. But it would be a pretty minor change. I wasn't planning to, unless I hear differently, on making the major changes like the county has done with Cambria and you see in Newport Beach or some other ones, which was quite extensive as to, you know, not only parking, not only noise issues, but also even regulated how close one could be to another.
Yeah.
But that's not where most of my research went to. It was just looking to see it more from a revenue standpoint. Then the other dealing with revenue that I came across, which was very interesting, I only found it in one. I'm still trying to see if I can find it in another one, and I don't know if it even worked or is it working, but it was an interesting in that it allowed for a surcharge. It was a May, so it wouldn't have to go to the ballot or anything, but it allowed any of your hotel operators to collect a surcharge of 50 cents per night. So it was voluntary, and then that would be part of the, you know, accounting that they provide the city for the TOT would show that they collected this extra 50 cents, and then they can determine who it would go to. It would have to go to a nonprofit, whatever they collect, and that money would be used for tourism purposes.
So, you know, I didn't do any more research because I didn't know if there was, you know, a majority that wanted to look into it. I found it interesting. I don't know if it's successful, you know, if it's voluntary, how many are doing it, and whether it's providing extra revenue. But at first glance, looked like it might be an extra source of revenue to provide for tourism promotions in the city.
So that could go to the visitor center or the promotions committee?
Promotions isn't a nonprofit. It could go to Chamber of Commerce. It could go to the visitor center.
Visitor center. Okay.
I believe because it's an arm of it, or any other, in the Merchants Association or some other.
Okay. So that might, like, pay for 4th of July or something like
Madam
that.
Madam Mayor, yeah. That was voluntary, though. If we put that in place, they could theoretically charge it if they want or if they don't. So it could be participating properties rather than forcing it.
Correct, yeah. You don't have to have any vote. No, it doesn't have any 218 implications because it's not a tax. It's just a voluntary surcharge that they pass on to the person that's staying at their hotel. This was 50 cents. It could be a quarter. It could be whatever. And in that money, they do have to account for and show where it went to.
Interesting. Okay.
I have a few questions.
You may.
So this is actually revenue generating in terms of charging for the permit, but not TOT.
No. It's the only revenue generator is hopefully, and I don't know, are we losing any TOT from vacation rentals are out there? Like I said, for ones that are managed through a management company or through a real estate company, we are aggressively pursuing those, and we did our audit for all of the companies just recently. But it's if there is someone out there that is on their own, maybe eBay, vacation rental of them, if they're renting them on their own, we are getting very few TOT for vacation rentals on their own. And like I said, a lot of it has to be an outreach. Solano Beach has a real good couple brochures that I think we can kind of copy that have photos that kind of go out, and you could probably put one together for very cheap to kind of say, this is our process, and you need to follow this process. Otherwise, there will be fines and penalties to try to get them in the voluntarily to come in, file for the business license, fill out this other form, and then start collecting it.
A couple of questions, if you don't mind. I think that actually these vacation rentals not collecting TOT is harmful to our hotel industry because people begin to choose the vacation rental and not the hotel. I also think that the term of 30 days or less to apply for, why not 31 days for a month of July, or why not 3 months if they're renting it out for the summer, for example. And did you see the suggested language that was submitted by Mr. Durek? Did staff get that email?
Yeah, I forwarded that to you a while ago. It was a suggested ordinance.
A proposed ordinance for the regulation of vacation rental units, and it includes TOT provisions and other things like that. You didn't get that? We got it in September.
If I could send it again, if it was September,
okay.
Then
I can
forgot
send it again.
About it.
Yeah, Janice sent it around again. But
yeah, it's when I mentioned it as a future agenda item, and this fellow, Mr. Durek, had sent it to me and said, you know, feel free to use any of the ideas. And I'm sure he pulled it from county documents.
And he suggests an application fee of $300 for that permit. I'm not sure either how county came down in Cambria. I remember listening to the discussion on the radio that day, and they were having a public hearing so that both residents and the owners and the rental agents could all come and talk to the Board of Supes. And I think we should probably also think about doing something like that, a public hearing where everyone, concerned neighbors, property owners, everybody should be able to come and tell us what they think about assessing a TOT on vacation rentals.
Well, I think that there's a difference, and it's up to the council what we want to do, but in other communities, the rentals have become such a problem. They've had, you know, I guess, noise problems and too many people in the rental unit. I think Cayucas probably has had that situation. I don't recall hearing anything like that here, but I do also know that I'm surrounded by units that are rented out, and I don't know if any of them are paying TOT or not. They're out-of-town owners. I don't know.
Well,
so I'm just concerned that we're missing the TOT. I wasn't really concerned with so many per square foot or per block or parking, because we
right.
really haven't had any problems with that I know of.
Mm-hmm.
Now, people listening to this, maybe they will say, hey, yeah, there is a problem on my street, and certainly that's something we should be aware of.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why I was kind of low-key in what I was looking for at this point, because I didn't hear those complaints from the community. Has anyone else heard? Have
yeah,
you?
One of the reasons I was looking forward to this ordinance was for the other reasons besides the money.
Mm-hmm.
There's two or three within probably a three-block area of my part of town, and there is frequently a parking issue with it. And on the weekend nights, Friday or Saturday, it will be fairly noisy as well. Not outrageously, but in a quiet neighborhood,
yeah.
you notice when it gets noisier. So I would like to see it go beyond just the TOT, the registration, but also look at the other aspects of spacing. I know when the on Pacific and I want to say between Napa and Monterey maybe, there were four houses that where the little preschool came down, and they put up four houses. Two of them didn't sell. They turned them into rentals.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, I don't know that that's okay. You know, I think we're trying to maintain neighborhoods and not create rentals. Beach Track, you know, traditionally has had a lot of rentals. I think that's becoming less. I'm not sure. But I would not be opposed to a public hearing. Hadn't thought of it. But I'd maybe even forming a little subcommittee here, a couple of council members meeting with Mr. Schultz, looking at an ordinance of some kind, and then bringing it back for a public hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Madam Mayor?
Yeah.
I can see requiring the business license and in that vein, having the people who are operating the vacation rentals register for a permit, a non-fee-oriented permit, because if nothing else, that gives us an emergency contact
right.
with from the police department. So if there is a noise or parking issue, they have somebody they can call rather than saying, you know, who is it going to go through the water bill? And I certainly think we ought to try to collect the TOT from them. I don't know about getting into how many of them per block and all of that. Maybe that's something we add down the road if we find there's
looking for. And if you stick it in the TOT and the revenue issues, it's just you that's looking over it. If you start getting into planning issues, it might end up having to be more in a zoning ordinance issue, which then would have to go to Coastal Commission, which I do know in Encinitas, where they're having major problems with their rentals. Their ordinance changes did not get approved by the Coastal Commission because
really?
They are pushing for the rental of units because it's visitor serving. But Encinitas is completely different. But that was one of my thought processes, well, not to do it too much. But, it's really up to you what you want to look at and how you want to look at it.
Okay, Thad, how do you feel?
Well, I think the first step ought to be what the city attorney is suggesting. Let's add language to the code and require a short-term lodging permit. Let's get some information, at least, from people who are renting out these things 30 days or less.
Mm-hmm.
As to the idea of the voluntary surcharge, I'm ambivalent. I'm not sure that does much for me.
Yeah. I think I'd rather wait until after we decide on the sales tax initiative before we pursue something like that.
I would
myself.
Agree.
Yeah. What about the permit not costing anything? Usually we have just a charge for processing. Is that just going to be included in their business license permit process? Or will there be extra processing?
It's up to you guys.
Why shouldn't they be charged the same amount any other business license is charged? That's what they're in, a business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
So it's just another form to fill out for that kind of use.
Right.
Okay.
But I want to be sure that we pursue the TOT idea, perhaps
right.
with Councilmember Winholtz's idea of one or two council people meeting with Rob. And Rob is just now seeing what Mr. Durek had proposed, which may some
right.
parts of it I found onerous and other parts I found useful. But meeting with Rob and seeing what we like and don't like of that and then bringing that back for possibly a public hearing to
mm-hmm.
allow
mm-hmm.
people to talk about it.
Yeah, I think that would be a problem.
But I think we need to move towards TOT collection from
the definitely, yeah. But that we can do right tonight. We can approve that.
Yeah.
And go for getting notice out in the water bills. I would suggest pink or red paper so that people notice it. It works.
Well, the TOT issue is covered in Rob's proposal anyway, yeah. So if nothing else, we can do it that way.
And I think that it's sneaky, I know, to have neighbors be telling on neighbors, but if it's an out-of-town resident, they may not pay attention to the notice. So do we make it, you know, if you are or know of a vacation rental in your neighborhood? Is that wording okay?
Yeah, we can come up with wording.
Intense there.
Okay. Because a lot of them could be just something that people know about, but the owner isn't in town and not paying attention.
This will require an ordinance change, so I'll bring it back for first and second reading, and during that process also, okay. I'll bring back a sample brochure that's sent out to the rentals.
Okay.
That was really clear. It wasn't the full ordinance. It was really clear and easy to understand as to the process you had to go through. And I think it was Solano Beach that had it. That was by far the easiest one to understand, and that's okay. The one I'll probably come close to mirroring. So,
all right. So, we need a motion for that, and then a second one if we want to develop a subcommittee. Do I hear a motion on the
I move that we direct city attorney to develop a permit and TOT mechanism for vacation rentals.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
All right, discussion?
I could see this subcommittee waiting until after we kind of have a geographical picture of where things are.
Okay.
To see how much of an issue it really is.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that once this notice goes out, we may get some input.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A whole bunch.
And, mm-hmm. yeah, maybe we just respond to that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm confused. What's the subcommittee? Now, we're talking about a motion that's been made, and I would support the motion that's been made. But the subcommittee, what are you doing with this? How does it figure into what we're asking?
Let's do this
do
first
right
and
now.
Then talk about the subcommittee.
No, I think we need to talk about it at one time, because if we're going to have a subcommittee and something else is going to happen later, why not wait until later to do it all at once?
That's what Betty just – oh, well, now she was saying wait till later. For the subcommittee.
Yeah. My idea of the subcommittee was to deal maybe more with a proactive planning issue, not to be involved with the money aspect. But maybe you were thinking differently when you...
The report's by me, but I'm going to ask for Bruce for assistance in this, because he'll know more of some of the details. I've attached to my staff report the municipal code, which is 1320.030. It was developed, I believe, in the... mid-80s, 85. It requires the planning director, which we really don't even have a planning director anymore, but it required them to go through a very detailed and lengthy process on the equivalency units for our annual water report that goes to PC and to you in January. The last couple of years, we have not had any public comment. That doesn't mean, as you heard one of the public speakers say, it's not an important report as to know how much annual water we have used and how many permits we've issued. With that being said, also, you know, we found with staff time it was one way possibly to reduce the workload in that department by not having the two public hearings and simplifying the report. From a lay standpoint, I thought it was important. The two things that I found important about that report is knowing and maybe making public exactly what our water usage was for the year and how many permits were being issued, not so much what the equivalency units were, water units, because we really have gotten away from that since we've gone to state water. So we're throwing the idea out there. You know, it's up to you guys. If you want us to go through the process in the two public hearings, we'll continue to do. But it was a way of streamlining it. My recommendation was as though you should still get that report at the end of the year or, you know, right after the first of the year. And then possibly if you saw something in it that was important, then you could just set it as a future agenda item to discuss it. Or if there wasn't anything that was important, you know, you could just say it's available for anybody that wants to see. But again, I'll open it up for you guys or any questions you have of Bruce. He'll know more the amount of time it takes and what's involved with that, following that, as opposed to maybe streamlining the process and not making it so onerous on them.
Okay. Questions? Betty?
Yes. On the first paragraph under discussion, the last line talks about, and to make a recommendation for the next year. Who will be making these recommendations if it doesn't come before planning or council? Don't we divvy up how many go to single family, how many go to multifamily? Isn't this that report?
Yeah. And we've never reached that amount, so we're not sure that recommendation.
We've changed that in the last couple of years.
We've never come close to getting at our allocation. We've always been so far under the threshold that it's never been a problem. We've had a surplus of water equivalency units available since we've turned over to state water.
But have we altered the percentages?
The Planning Commission has made some recommendations, and I've kind of thought they were in the past superfluous because they just added more credit on to a threshold we weren't even approaching.
Mm.
I could have commented on some of the earlier comments. At any time, anybody could call our office, and we'd be happy to tell them what we have. And I think what Rob is recommending, so we don't get away with this reporting system, we would still report that, and Rob can jump in, but at any time, any council member could bring this up for a council item at any time you'd like. We're just talking about opening a public hearing because, in the past few years, it hasn't, since we turned over to state water, there really haven't been any issues.
I hear that, and I appreciate the fact that we're trying to reduce the amount of work. My concern is that this information still be in front of the public, whether or not they comment on it. And maybe it doesn't have to be a public hearing, but you know how often they do at the Board of Supervisors or at SLOCOG will receive a report so people hear the information, but then you don't really do anything about it. The action is to receive the report. And maybe we could have a condensed report, but I think that information needs to stay out there. I think the comment about water becoming more important and as the city tends to grow and as we look at annexation issues, I just hate for it to disappear. That's all. And I know that it can always come forward, but as you get new council members, they won't know that it exists to ask for it unless it's something that we see annually.
Well, the comment that was made here, what struck me about it was, here it comes to public hearings, but nobody knows about it anyway. You know, even though it's at a public hearing, they haven't paid attention or they don't know what it means or they don't bother to get a copy of it. So what I was thinking when that comment was made was, what if a notice goes out in the water bill every time the report is updated to just say, you know,
sure. We
have the new water report. It's available if anybody wants to come look at it. It's at, you know, the Public Services Department. And that actually, I think, would get the information to more people than having it on our agenda.
Madam Mayor?
Yeah.
The idea of this report, I think, is long past its prime.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, this was critical when we were playing the change out the toilet game, and you got so many water equivalencies for a single family report. But I don't think we need to waste two public hearings on it, because after we've rebuilt the desal plant, we've got state water, all of this stuff has gone away. As a matter of fact, I think that, to be technical, that law really sundowned anyway. So, we've still gone through the motions, but the thing supposedly ended with the change of the century. So we're just sort of doing it, but it's a meaningless gesture.
So even though we haven't approached the maximums under the different categories, we'll just leave them as they are unless we at some point approach the maximums, and then we can look at the percentages?
I think that would work. I mean, we know on a monthly basis where we're at. We track it. And if there are, at any time, we could, you'll be provided that information. Anybody could ask. I think the suggestion to put it in the water report we send all the customers is a good one. And anybody could bring it up, but we haven't even come close to even getting near what our limits are. And we haven't for quite some time.
If I could ask a question here.
Yeah.
So you're suggesting, Mr. Schultz, that we would take out 030, 040, 050, 060, but But that's submitting an annual report to the City Council, that's submitting it to the Planning Commission, reviewing it, City Council adopting a water equivalency program. The public hearing actually doesn't happen until 060C. And then you say, instead of that, in its place, you would have an annual water report prepared. But would it be delivered to the City Council, or would it be reviewed by the Planning Commission?
We can work on any language that you direct me to, yeah. I mean, if you, whatever you would like that process to be, if you want it to be a report that someone can announce that it's available, if you want to put in the water bills, I mean, whatever that process you want it to be, to whatever level, I can work on language.
Well, the fact of the matter is, I don't like anything that's public becoming not public, because I like the public to be involved. And that they don't show up here doesn't mean that they're not concerned. A lot of them are watching on TV. However, being public can happen as a hearing, and it can also happen as a report being presented to us on consent calendar or something like that, so that those things are public knowledge. They're down at the library, down at Mills. There's also the option of going from two public hearings a year to one. And what you gain, really, from making water public, even if we aren't meeting our equivalency units and that kind of thing, is that we remain aware of it as a resource and that we remember to conserve, that we keep the numbers in front of people over and over and over, saying, you know, we're using desal, we're using this, or we're overdrafting or we're underdrafting our wells, those kinds of things. When we were on PWEB, water was a controversial topic. And we would get these reports, you know, from our staff person on water, and they would be kind of conflicting in their outlooks and things like that. And we would have to harangue them a little bit. I don't think that this is something that needs to go into the background and go to something that goes into a read file or something. I think it still needs to come to council. I think it still needs to be reviewed by Planning Commission. And I think water equivalency units should be set by either elected bodies or appointed bodies, not, with due respect, by staff. I mean, I think we need to be looking at them and saying, how do we want to allot those percentages, even though we don't get to them? And I remember, too, when we didn't make the percentages on residential, we simply rolled it over in at the ninth month or something.
Yeah. Right. Pat, how you feel?
At this point, I agree with Bill. I think Morro Bay has outlived this ordinance, these three things. But we still need the report.
Right.
And we, in my opinion, we don't need it to go to the Planning Commission. We don't need it to come to us. What we need it to do is simply be on file, so that if somebody wants to find out, and if you want to put it in the water bill and say it's on file, fine. As long as it's being done and it's available, then that's as far as we need to go at this point in time.
You could even make a consent item out of it, or an information-only item, and have it come out with a consent agenda. As far as just the amount of equivalencies used and the amount of equivalencies available, you could do that on one page and send the whole report out in a water bill, I would think. And so you put it here as a consent item, you send it out with a water bill, and you've pretty much covered the territory with it. And at least this way, we don't have, you know, it doesn't have to be a monster. It can just be, this is what we've used. This is what we anticipate will be available next year.
I think keeping it on the consent calendar keeps it public at Mills and at the library. And you bring it up, you look.
Possible in the report and language that you know what you're getting, and then it would be put on the consent calendar in the water bill. So I'm going to try to propose language, working with Bruce, on what would be included in that on an annual basis that'll simplify the process but still provide public notice. And like I said, you'll have chances to mark it up on the first reading if you don't think I've followed your direction.
Madam Mayor, if I can, what I was thinking about reporting is, you know, the kind of the glossy product that we do that summarizes. Yeah. That was the report, and I think that comes out annually, at least, annually or biannually, something twice a year, once or twice a year. And that
so that's
was
what you put on the consent agenda then?
No, we don't have a problem putting the memo together, and that could come, but I'm just talking the feedback to the, because what I heard was on a monthly report, I was thinking about an annual report. The glossy one.
That glossy one,
yeah,
that's coming out.
Yeah, the nice one.
That one talks about water quality. Does it also talk about the equivalency units?
It talks about water quality and sometimes conservation.
But does it talk about how water is allotted in this town and the decisions made?
It's more of a public health announcement, the quality of the water.
Yeah, I know. I've seen it.
We could figure something out.
To kind of include that.
That's already there, but the report on the status of our water consumption.
Okay.
On an annual basis.
Are we clear on the motion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Yes. Okay. All right.
Bridget seems to have.
I think that's it for tonight. My quote tonight is from William Saroyan, and he says, "In the time of your life, live so that in that wondrous time you shall not add to the misery and sorrow of the world, but shall smile to the infinite variety and mystery of it." Merry Christmas, happy holidays, and we'll see you all next year.